meeting of the Public Facilities Committee on Wednesday, November 9th at 7 o'clock. And I'm joined at the beginning of the meeting by Susan Albright was here to step out for a minute. I chair the committee, Barbara Russell Glazer, Ward 3 Ward Chancellor, Chancellor Tony Gentile from Ward 4, Chancellor Vicki Danberg from Ward 6, myself, Deb Crossley, chair of the committee, Chancellor at large from Ward 5, and our committee clerk, Nadia Khan. And we're also joined by Chancellor Alton Leary, not on the committee, for the first item. So the first item is we're going to take up under 12-16 the discussion with the DPW regarding the city's recycling and solid waste programs. We have Juanita Traber joining us, which is Lisa, and who is our new recycling environmental manager. I actually thought the title was something different, but I'm reading it here. And Commissioner of Public Works, Jim McGonigal. Well, we have Jim Marks, Director of Operations for DPW. For the first item, but I believe what we're going to do here is one of you is going to give us an update on her findings since she's been with us for just a few months now, and has gone around and assessed the condition of all things having to do with recycling and waste management, and has begun to make some changes, has some ideas for other changes and programs we may want to invest in. And this is a preliminary. She'll be issuing a report at the end of the year, which is why we didn't have anything in our package. So we're going to hear from her tonight. It's an opportunity to ask questions and so forth. It's about a 15-minute presentation, and we do have a lot on our agenda this evening. We're going to certainly wrap this up by 7:45, if not before. So take it away.
Thank you, everyone. Just to start off with, in May of 2016, right as I was coming on board with the city, a resolution was passed by the city council requesting the development of a long-term solid waste and recycling plan. That task is really quite an endeavor, and there had been no one in my post for 15 months, so a lot of information gathering and research needed to be done to really understand where we are currently and what needs to be done to improve the program. So what I am developing by the end of the year is a framework report that will be a place where all of that information is gathered to develop a long-term plan. So the timeline is essentially being pushed back a little bit. So the purpose of this framework is to describe current practices, to provide proposed solutions for improvement, and to propose long-term goals for the city. So right now, the report has been drafted and is just being reviewed internally. There's five sections: introduction and background, current practices and policies, proposed solutions for improvement, education and outreach, and then looking forward to the long term. In the introduction section, kind of the highlights, it's substantial just because there's a lot of context to set for why one potential solution would be better than another. So really, I propose to move the city's rhetoric away from solid waste and recycling and into sustainable materials management, really changing the nomenclature and having everyone start to think about materials management, not just, oh, it's a waste, it goes away, and then I don't care about it. So I also want to explain the waste management hierarchy, and a lot of information is from the EPA on that. Include a summary of the Massachusetts Solid Waste Master Plan, and then a brief history of Newton's practices, a zero waste definition, and then a vision and goal setting objective. So in the current practices and policy section, there are a couple of subsections: residential materials management, There's curbside services, and then there's the resource recovery center services. The city-generated materials management, so that's waste from a building like this, or you know, any of the other city buildings, like the senior center, for example. Waste from city operations would be some of the DPW yards, for example, or from parks and recreation. And then waste from public systems has really turned into the Big Belly solar program. And there's going to be, or there is a section for best practices comparison to better understand, you know, other research that communities have done on how to best manage residential and municipal industries. So in the proposed solutions for improvement section, I go through those same waste sources and then have solution categories broken down for each one. So the solutions will focus on either waste reduction, cost reduction, or an increase in recovery or increase in diversion of materials away from disposal. Education and outreach. There will be a plan for 2017 education and outreach activities. Right now I just included the various methods and what the city is currently doing for print materials, social media, which was formerly active and has not been active, local media like news, local radio, the newspaper, community engagement, just some ideas as far as, you know, even going down to going door to door in a neighborhood or gathering a bunch of volunteers to do that type of activity. And then some information on technology services, which includes Newton's 311 program, and then also a new service that's being put in place next week on American Recycled Day. That's powered by a company called Recollect, and the program will be called Recycle Right Newton. The last section is looking forward. So some suggested improvements in technology, and there will be some tie-ins to the Newton Leeds 2040 initiative. So the proposed next step after the framework report is released in late December, early next year, I plan to seek feedback from other stakeholder groups, including City Council, the Solid Waste Commission, and other local organizations like Green Newton. I would like to come back to the Public Facilities Committee in February, maybe March, you know, however the timeline works out, to present some of the findings in the report, and then begin long-term planning for development in spring of 2017.
Yeah. I actually, to start off with, I actually thought this looked like a table of contents, and I actually thought you were going to enumerate some of the findings that you are grappling, or some of the issues that you're grappling with right now, to give us and I heard some of that when I attended a Solid Waste Commission, formative Solid Waste Commission meeting a couple weeks ago, whenever it was. So, I think this committee would be more interested in some of the substance that you're going to be including in this report. It's not very well organized, but... Mm-hmm.
So there is certainly a lot of content. It's extremely difficult to boil it down. I know at some point there has been discussion of, you know, an entire public facility meeting just discussing the content of that report. It's 30 pages long. It's difficult to pick out what would be most beneficial to mention or to discuss. And there's certainly a lot of existing policy practices and then the proposed solutions for each of those.
Okay. The commissioner would like to say something.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. We did actually just present a high level of what is in her report, because she will be back here at the end of December presenting the full report. We wanted to give you a quick overview of what's going in here. As I said, this will probably be a full night to present the entire report. We wanted to just give high-level overview and get answering questions and hearing feedback that the committee may have.
Okay, I'll let people ask questions, I guess, so I'll
just
do it that way. Susan, if you
want. So two easy questions and then one comment. So what's recollect? I said it, and then it's asked by recommending it. You can take the beginning. What is it?
Recollect is a company that provides a technology service specific to waste and recycling services. So what their basic function is to provide a calendar with reminders as to when your garbage and recycling day is. Sounds pretty simplistic, however, the times that it will really benefit the city and residents is holidays, when there's any type of delay, so that folks will automatically receive either a notification on their phone, an email, or for those that don't use, email or computers a lot, you can actually also receive a phone call. So it's applicable for demographics.
Is that a service you have to pay for?
Yeah.
Let's pay a lot for it.
The annual subscription is
$16,000. Wow, I can't believe the IT department couldn't do that, but.
So there are other features that I elected to have the city go along with the calendar operation. So there's also called a waste wizard, and it's a search bar that folks can type in whatever material they don't know the appropriate disposal method for, and it pops up with our local kind of preference for where it should go. So what the plaque says on there, it will say collect and take to a local retail outlet.
So maybe you can do a demo for us
at
some point so we can see what it does.
I'd be happy to.
So my other question was, the Solid Waste Commission, does it have members and is it now officially meeting?
Yes and yes. So the Solid Waste Commission has had two meetings thus far since I have started, and our next one is next week Thursday.
So
NPC.
Yeah, we have a representative here.
So
I'll call on that? I remember Sidra needs to.
Yeah, Sidra needs to hear it.
Yeah.
So my only comment that I wanted to make is that this seems to be a growing trend to give us, this is addressed not to you, but to the commissioner, to give us, like a table of content and what we're going to do in a report sometime down the road. And I'm just not sure, while it's wonderful to meet you and hear what you're going to do down the road, I'm just not sure that this is as useful as it could be with our time together.
Can I address that?
Because I
was involved in this a little bit. So the reason I was involved is because this came out of a resolution that happened during budget time. And shortly after the budget, we met. Allison and I met with the mayor and with Maureen and others to talk about how we were going to produce something that satisfied what was a very real request for information by the city council. It wasn't one of these resolutions that was just kind of, poo-pooed, passed over, or whatever, or given lip service. So we met, back in June?
Yes.
So we met back in June to talk about, we wanted to make sure everybody was on the same page as to what was going to be in the report. We agreed that once Juanita was got her feet wet a little bit, that we would meet again to talk about this, which we did a week or two ago. And so the purpose of this meeting, or one of the reasons for this meeting, is to make sure that this report, which was supposed to be done by the end of the year, which is going to be done, that it doesn't show up and then all of a sudden somebody says, well, gee, I thought we were going to get information on X. So what the main reason for tonight is to let you know what's going to be in the report. So if there's something that Juanita, went over, well, she told you what's going to be in the report. And if you think that something's missing, we wanted to talk about it now rather than talk about it when the full report comes out in December. So that's why it looks like a table of contents.
This is hard. It's a great table of contents and it's a great organizational scheme. Going to have wonderful information in it, but it's hard to have context to even say what's missing and what's not missing without the report itself.
even a draft.
Or even a list of findings, just, you know, what have you seen since you started that is an issue? So even a list might be helpful. But, okay, Jim and then Vicki has a question.
Yeah, again, this is going to be just like our snow plan. This is a living document, so we're going to want your input. Because this is something we're putting together and then putting on the shelf. So again, this is to get your input. You know, the one thing I heard is that, you know, we have this history of not including the council and the residents, and this is what we're trying to do. This is the first time when we've met the group.
Right. I think we appreciate that. We're just trying to... You know, we hear things all the time, you know, there's a problem with this program or a problem with that program, and I know that Juanita has been cataloging a lot of this, and so I think we're eager to hear what she's seeing from her point of view. But we may have to, but whatever. So I just want to mention that we've been joined by both Councilor Lappin, Tom Morton, and President Lennon. Council from Ward 1 as well, and Vicki and then Asha.
Okay. Thank you, Wendy. It's very, very nice to meet you. You've been here for a couple of months now. 6 months. Councilor Claflin actually hit on a question that I was going to ask. Could you just elaborate a little bit on some of the things that you have looked at and things that you might concentrate on or be interested in making changes in?
Certainly. I'll try to do something. So I would say when I first started, I went to work right away at cleaning up the Reserve Recovery Center. It needed a lot of TLC in both organizing things and kind of best management practices for several material streams. So I spent quite a bit of summer, my time at over summer, going there and also asking for additional support staff for that site to prevent it from kind of falling back into old habits. And so that is a place that I have spent a lot of time on and will continue to spend a lot of time on. There has also been definitely a look into education and how to improve that. My focus since I started has been on implementing this program Recollect. It has a lot of different features, and I think it will be a great benefit for as many residents as possible to get into part of the service that program provided, was actually a redesign of our existing recycling logo. So that's actually featured right on the mm-hmm. station in the corner. Mm-hmm. So it's just modernized a little bit from how it had previously looked. So that will...
It's a great logo. I'm proud of that.
I certainly didn't create it, but I just kind of...
Yeah,
exactly. And so that is now going to be kind of a focal point for an educational campaign in the coming year. So this is like running up dominoes to knock them all down. This was one of the things that I knew we would get in that service. So once that was online and I got the file link last week, now I can include that in all of the educational materials going forward and try and create kind of a brand around meeting to recycling, which isn't unprecedented. That's how it has been done before, so I'm just kind of revising that logo.
Okay. A pet thought of mine has always been organic material recapturing or not allowing the organics to go into the waste stream.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you will be looking at as part of your environmental management?
Absolutely. It's certainly something that I have heard even from my interview that was mentioned. So it's certainly something that many communities that once they have kind of all of the most basic foundations of infrastructure in place, and you know, things are kind of running well, and it's basically a service that is service or material stream that you target after, you know, you feel that, well, I'm doing a lot of education on recycling, I feel very good about where we're at with that, now let's target this other material that's in the waste stream, adding a lot of tonnage, adding a lot of weight, and there's certainly a variety of ways to do that.
Even if we try to go after just the low-hanging fruit, in other words, we've got, I think they said that if you produce a ton a week, that's kind of the rule of thumb, then it's worth doing it. And we've got all the cafeterias of all of our schools, we've got, certainly that is enough to look at as a start. And I would love to see us doing some programs in the school cafeterias and partnering with someone who can do the collection, and we don't have to do all the pieces, we just have to kind of put the program together. But I'd like to get a report on what, if any, headway has been made in that realm.
Definitely. There is a section in the report.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Allison and then Scott.
What are the things that the city does have a lot of the 45% goal for diverting recycling from the last budget, which is a pretty significant improvement for where we are now. So the important thing, some of the confusion is how we measure that. I'm a big believer in what is measured can get improved. So I want to be really clear that we know exactly how much and what kind of materials we are diverting and using recycling. And so one of the things, like the big, for example, the big building, my understanding is that they get measured by the gallon. And we get billed by the ton for recycling. So I'm wondering how, that seems problematic to me. How is there any ideas about how we can reconcile that? Or we can figure out what we're recycling from the public recycling versus the residential recycling.
Definitely. I think there's a lot of easy kind of room for improvement on that one aspect in particular. So I believe, and I haven't looked into this myself, but the deli program is not managed by me, so it's managed by Parks and Recreation. But I believe that the deli solar actually offers some type of conversion rate on, you know, kind of an average gallon, how much waste of trash and recycling that would be. So by getting that number, we would convert the volume that it's currently measured in using their sensors to get a loop and kind of better fit it in with the other metrics that I've been collecting.
And just one other point is, I'm concerned about having sort of siloed the different areas of where we have the schools, we have public recycling, and we have residential recycling, and you're only one person. So, and I know not all that, I understand the report is not going to deal with the schools.
Correct.
Schools are a big chunk of what we produce. So that's something at some point I would like to be able to address and have sort of a cohesive look at these areas and how possibly they can work together, because I think it makes sense to sort of look at all three of those. And, as one waste stream. And also, I'd like to know more about whether the opportunity would be for cost savings for the state. Because, you know, we are paying $65 a ton for a trash and $60 a ton just to get $100 in recycling. At some point, my concern is that those tonnage of recycling could certainly go up in the future. And there will be some opportunity for us if we can significantly reduce the amount that we're throwing away. Even if we improve our recycling, even at that level, there could be some significant savings. Is that changing in the report at all? The financial impact of any of the work that you're doing?
There will be financial information. It may not be as detailed as, you know, projections on, you know, if we reduce by this much, we'll save this much. I would say that's kind of the next step after the information that's gathered in the report. So the numbers that you quoted, I just want to they were close, but I would have to draft them. So for solid waste, the city in fiscal year 17 paid $66 a ton, and that material is sent to the Wheel River Waste Energy Facility in Millbury. And for single stream recycling, it's a little bit more complicated on the pricing for processing of that material. In our waste management contract, it's $92.37. However, we do receive rebates for the value of the material in that stream. So we end up paying roughly $30 per ton, and that does vary month to month. But 30 is a good kind of average. So it is actually pretty significant how much less we pay for recycling processing than scrap tonnage.
I knew that you had a system like that, but I didn't realize that you were getting back that much in terms of.
Yes, and I'm still delving in with waste management on how they calculate the equation each month. I think there's room for improvement on that too.
And just one other point, you had talked about doing, one of the things in the report was increasing the odds of recycling cars and better enforcement and follow up violations. So I know that's something that you had already started to do. I just wanted to have any new information or any updates on how that program is going.
Certainly. I have some data that I actually don't have on me, but I do have some anecdotal data as well. So with the effort that Allison just mentioned is an increase in consistency of our curbside compliance enforcement. So it's something that the city has been doing all along, but I would say with the gap in the selling of my positions that we lost a lot of consistency, particularly with, certain waste management drivers who continue to do the same thing that they had always done, and other drivers may not have been doing that. And there was kind of no single uniform policy to encourage that. Beginning in October, I put a policy in place. To really try and determine areas of non-compliance that were fairly straightforward. So things like an overflowing trash charge, for example, that's not using an overflow bag. So if there's a bag, sitting outside of the cart, the procedure is that will get stickered, and then waste management will actually call that into their service center, and at the end of every day, I receive a report on how many carts they have. So it's definitely closing a lot of holes that were in that system before. And so then what I've been doing is to send a letter to the current resident of that address, and basically to send them some educational information on why it was tagged and how to remedy the situation going forward.
Do you know how many letters are sent out?
I would say it's about 50 a week. And so sometimes they're not able to send a letter for a various reasons. And that could just be when the address was called in that it was incorrect. So, I look it up on the assessor's database, and if it's not there, I just don't send one. So there's actually roughly 250 tags that were in October, but I sent about, I think, 190 letters.
Okay. I noticed a lot of overflow in my neighborhood, carts that are open and it's clearly like
Yeah, and I would say it's early stage on that, and I will be communicating with waste management kind of up what things are working well for us, what things we can still improve on, and same for them. And the incident that you raised about the asphalt waste management meeting, I would say is where they can still improve on their consistency, and I've been in touch with their belt manager to, point out, hey, this is not tagged, and it was up at this address, and, he didn't immediately know which driver it was.
Can I just ask what the tag looks like?
Did I have it
out there or something?
It's a 6-inch by 6-inch square. It's yellow with black writing on it.
Oh, okay. And then it just stays on forever.
No.
I got one.
Oh.
Someone has a car in front of my.
The only point I wanted to make was on the report piece about, I apologize for being late, but I didn't see the table of contents, but if I heard the commissioner correctly, if it's going to be a report that's living and breathing like the snow plan, and it's going to be done by the end of the year, might it be helpful for the council, especially having the chair of PF and the chair of finance here, that if there are suggestions that people have, when we get that report, that any modifications be discussed and then be ready for budget. You know, so when the DPW budget comes, I know Councilor Crosby will follow up. I know Councilor Gentile will in committee of the whole if it's not done. And if it's going to be a breathing document, it gives us some time to see the context and get some things ready for budget, so that might be helpful.
So what sort of presented, as I understand it, is we have this table of contents, and now you've filled in some of it just from answering questions. You want to get the report out at the end of the year and then come back to us in February, so between to have a fuller discussion of what's in the document and what's in your plan, and so between the time we get the report, I assume there's a final draft or something, but there's room still for, from this point right now, table of contents looks great. What I've heard so far is interesting. I don't know what else to ask for.
I'm only trying to find a way to help the council get a little more input.
And I really appreciate doing this in steps so that we can, ease into what this whole program looks like. So we'll be able to, once we get that document, communicate with you individually or in an organized way, whatever we're able to do, and we'll see you again sometime in February to have that conversation, if that sounds right. Yeah, that's plenty of time for budget. I mean, I'm assuming that some of the proposals you're going to make are not just policy items, but they may involve changes in the budget, perhaps? I don't know.
Definitely.
Okay. All right.
So I was just going to say that when the next time we do discuss this, I'd like to just get a little bit more information. I know some of the answers, but how we get from, 92.37 a ton for, single stream recycling, how the calculation is done that gets us down to roughly 30. But in addition to that, I'd be curious to know how we keep waste management honest in that. So, and I don't want to get into it tonight. It would just be, helpful to get a little more information on that.
Thanks. I'd like to emphasize a point that Allison made. I think it's very interesting to be talking about a better coordinated citywide program rather than having these different entities doing different things. That makes a lot of sense to me. I know that sometimes you have dumpsters instead of carts, or you have the big belly system instead of carts instead of dumpsters. So there's a physical difference, but there have been some issues, I believe, on the Parks and Rec side about combining trash and recycling that I think really need to get addressed, because I believe it's not legal to do that. But, I hope that you'll be able to address that in a constructive way, at least get that conversation started.
It's certainly my goal.
Great, thanks. Well,
thanks for more questions.
Okay, and then I'll be...
I was looking for when the Goodwill truck was open, and I now know it's only open until 2:30. Every day?
Yes. I mean, it's essentially open when the recovery center is open. So it is closed at 2:45 each day.
Is the usage of that about the same as it always was, or is it not? Oh, maybe you don't know.
I do not know what the usage was before, but I can say that it is easily the number one visited spot at the research company that they have it for.
I just wanted to say that the progress we've been reviewing, and if anyone is interested, I can send you the meeting minutes to be we'll be discussing the report and sort of ongoing issues on that. And then I just also wanted to say that we had discussed the tour of Rumford Avenue at some point, and then maybe even a tour of the recycling the MRF in Avon at some point. And I know I had gone on a tour a number of years ago with a Lady Ventile, and it was very interesting. So I would like to follow up on those and give the city council opportunities to do that as well.
Excellent. In regards to solid waste commission, I don't remember how many seats are there, 9 seats on it.
Well, officially there's about 16.
And how many are still
we're suggesting more like 9 when we organize it. 16 is kind of a large number.
Yep.
But we have a pretty big group of people. I would say we have about 6 people on it, 3 new residents that come regularly.
One. Who are serving official terms?
Well, they're still from their last.
That's where I was going. Is I think that there's appointments that need to be made or
I just wanted to check and make sure what we have. I put a note to make sure Shelly check on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right then. I know all their appointments as of now. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure everybody remembers that. Okay. So, thank you very much. I'd like to move on. So, I have a motion to hold this item.
That's all.
All right. So, we have a motion to hold. All in favor? That's everybody, which is 7 tonight. Mark Laredo will not be able to join us this evening. Thank you very much. And it looks like you survived the trial by fire. looking forward to your report.
Yeah, looking forward to
that.
Yeah.
Good job.
All right.
Thank you. The next item we're taking up under Sarah's notes were both Donovan and Alan Mandel joining us at the table. One of those is
Alan.
Okay, so we're joined by Alan Mandel from the Law Department, as well as Donovan Khan from the Law Department and Marie Lawler from the Law Department, all here for different reasons. So I'll introduce everybody now. What we're doing with this item, this is about the, this was generated by petitions we've had before, some of which we've held from Verizon Wireless, slash Telco, to attach equipment to poles in various locations throughout the city. And we realized, if you recall in our conversations, that, as always, our authority is limited, but there was confusion about our authority where it began and ended, and what we could do to get a better understanding of this issue. So we just formed the subcommittee, and Councilor Galbraith and Lappin and myself joined. It's actually a very large group, Mr. Allen and Lee Young and Donald Khan and John Dagley from engineering. Joe Mulvey from IT, Lou Taverna, also from engineering, and then we have some chronically absent members, but who will join us at some point, from the fire department. I haven't met the fellow yet, so what's his name again?
Alex, I think he's across the hall, actually.
Ah, well, that's all right. He's weighed in on email, but he hasn't been able to attend a meeting. We've met 3 times. And the law department, primarily in the person of Attorney Mandel, has done a lot of research and a lot of work drafting some very lengthy documents that required a lot of discipline to read, and then some summaries. And in your packets is the short version of those things. I hope you've had a chance to read it. And I think you'll see that I'm gonna do a general, like, really summary, one or 2 sentences, which is we have a number of options for controlling the estate law, how we just
dispose of or dispose or position or rules that we might want to create to locate these items. However, once we establish what we now know is called a base station, most of that authority disappears. There is an envelope within which that is still defined, but it's huge. You can go up 20 feet, you can go out 6 feet, and that's huge. So it's a bigger envelope. So once you agree to locate it, we lose control. So long story short, and I'm going to let you go into some of it, is that if we were to create a set of guidelines for the city for different types of installations, because then we realize, well, there's stuff that you put on poles, and then there's something called a monopole, different types of installations, and where we would prefer to have those in the city, and what kinds of restrictions we would like to impose for what kinds of reasons. And it could even be aesthetic reasons, such as design standards we established for village centers. And it could be that we say we never want it on decorative light poles or things like that. So we will be in better shape because at least we can hand that off to the people who are definitely going to be coming forward to us looking to install this equipment. Because what we can't do, the final analysis, is we can't be in a position where we are preventing them from providing service to their customers, who are our constituents and everybody who drives through here. So, I'm wondering, so Alan, can you kind of, there's one memo in here in particular that I think is, a really good summary, which is the one, got the item number, 249, no, that's not an item number, we don't have an item number. This is the memo from November 1st, 2016, it's just a couple pages in. And there's the beginnings of some examples of the kinds of things we could establish as guidelines. But with these things in mind, as Alan can walk us through, then what we're trying to do is give ourselves a framework within which to approve with conditions or continue our conversations with Telco, who had given us a formal extension, which was necessary. Alan crafted that in the department, and so we have their agreement that we can extend, but we've got to make the decision by the end of the year at this point with what we now know. So, your turn, Alan.
What I tried to do is, at least in this first memo, was just lay out in very short form the kind of relations, authority under state law, and then limitations on that authority under federal law, and then provide some examples that might have to do with management of the public ways, the location of the facility, the height, things of that nature. So, the state law, we have general notions of managing the use of the public ways, so something doesn't interfere with some other use in the public ways, snow plowing, ADA requirements, traffic obstacles, things of that nature. Then you have some things like the height of poles, then you have a row of 40-foot poles, you have an ordinance with a 40-foot height limitation. That can be exceptions, but by council vote. Someone comes in with a 70-foot pole, and that's probably not going to cut it. So, things of that nature, ground clearance, some things that tie in with just public safety. You want the installations to be safe, they should comply with relevant codes like the National Electrical Safety Code, the construction standards of the pole owners, things like that. This memo includes some, I guess we call examples of some some standards that might be considered. We've talked to in the past about aesthetics. That's actually something that's fairly well recognized, as a legitimate basis for conditions or even denials. So there can be things like we discussed, the village entrance, poles that are right in front of someone's house, things that you might not want them on a scenic way. I mean, it could be close to an historic property. I mean, there could be things that come into play. The important things are that somehow they have to relate to the management of the use of public ways. They can't just be, we don't like it, we don't want it. There has to be some connection, there. The case law says that, even if you have a legitimate reason under state law to deny an application, federal law comes into play, and that denial, even if it's legitimate, may not hold up. If you're unreasonably discriminating against one carrier versus another, easy examples are, you let one carrier do something in an identical fact pattern, and now you're just telling someone else they can't do it. That can be a problem. There's the effectively prohibiting a carrier from providing wireless service. It sounds like a simple standard, but it's incredibly complex, and all of the law has developed, for the most part, in the context of powers, not pole attachments in public ways. And it's also related to coverage. A coverage gap hasn't really dealt with what we're seeing now, which is capacity issues, trying to alleviate capacity problems on a system by creating these small cells attached to poles. So there's some uncharted water there, but bottom line is if the applicant wants to question a limitation, that's something they can consider and make their case on it. We talked about not being allowed to regulate based on radio frequency emissions. The FCC rules apply, and certainly it's legitimate to require compliance with that. You could probably impose some annual monitoring requirements to make sure that the requirements are kind of continuously being satisfied, that type of thing. Those are kind of the basics under a grant of location. We have the other situation, the base station problem. Once a wireless attachment goes up on a pole, that pole becomes a base station. It doesn't automatically mean that a wireless attacher can then put anything they want on the pole. But as you point out, as long as it's not a substantial change in the dimensions of the base station, as defined by the FCC, they get this automatic approval. You don't get to impose any state law type standards like aesthetics and anything else. So it's really a very narrow, limited review. Do they satisfy that federal standard, for being able to put this up as a right, and it's got to be done within 60 days. It's a tight timetable, which is one of the reasons they're all tight timetables. See, even the ones that are governed by state law, they have shot clock limitations on action. Those are presumptions, but nevertheless, they're kind of objectives for reaching decisions. The shot clock, and then the other law with the mandatory approval issue. because the time frames are so short, it really puts a premium on what you ask applicants to provide in their application. I mean, if you have a bunch of criteria that you want to use to review an application for, based on state law, it would be a good idea to get as much information as you can through the application to help you make findings on certain issues. So, you know, that can be an important thing.
So I think just interject for a minute. So just on this point, I think our committee agrees that we need to continue to work to develop that set of guidelines, because without them, we really have no way to guide our conversation, and we don't have any rules or guidelines so far, so we have these petitions coming into us who want to establish new day stations. You know, but what criteria could we use that's reasonable for denying them at this point in time? We can ask for them to be relocated, but we don't really have much ground to stand on, so we thought we need to develop these guidelines, and then that there would be an application form that would comport with the guidelines, so that basically it would be a way to walk the petitioner through.
Yeah, and the guidelines are very helpful to the applicant, because you know, they're kind of coming in, and they've obviously submitted these kinds of applications. They have a pretty good idea of what the concerns are, but the decisions have to be based on objective standards, so it's real important to create those standards, embed them in an application form, instructions, so the applicants have an idea of what they can be expected to comply with. You know, an example, you know, we talked about the coal or the attachments right in front of someone's home. You know, from conversations with Verizon Wireless, if they're made aware of a problem, they can try to work around it. They can try to find another location that's not as obtrusive, where they meet most of their service objectives. So if they know that up front in a standard, don't put the wireless attachment on a pole directly in front of somebody's house. Of course, that can apply to the pole too, so they might want to get the pole moved. Those kinds of things, I think, will help everybody if they're put out there as a standard, because in a lot of cases, they can be, you know, the wireless company can accommodate the city.
So,
over the past 10 years, if there's a more boring subject, I can't remember. Okay? It's really painful. It really is painful. So, when you said that you were going to... So when you agreed to this subcommittee, I was thrilled, and I thought that.
Thank us for doing it.
Right.
It is. I totally.
And I also want to say to Alan, I mean, I feel for you. Maybe you like this stuff, but I think it absolutely okay. But I do want to say this: the information that you gave to us, it's very clear. It really, you know, spells out what we need to know. So I appreciate that you did that. But I thought that you were going to do exactly what you said, is to come up with a recommendation for a set of guidelines and bring that to us so that we could, you know, and then come up with an ordinance so that we knew what we, you know, so that people could know what to expect.
We are hoping to do that, but not in time for this first petition.
Well,
because we already had to get an extension.
Then deny it. I mean, they certainly haven't proven to me that service isn't provided in the areas that they want to put these poles up in. Okay? And I personally think, I'm going to vote against them if they come up in December, because they haven't demonstrated the need. And from what I'm hearing from people is that they, one of the things that they're supposed to do is demonstrate that there's a need, and not try to show some other provider that their, you know, poles bigger than their poles, okay? Because that's what it sounds like to me. So I don't like the idea of Verizon or anybody else you know, being the tail wagging the dog, which is what they're doing to us. And maybe we should have had the foresight to anticipate this, but, you know, that's what happens with government. You know, there's improvements in technology and changes, and then we're always trying to catch up. So I think that we should have the opportunity to develop some well-thought-out criteria, which is what I think the subcommittee should do, and then, you know, bring it back to us to go from there. And I just don't think that we should be, you know, feeling rushed that we have to, you know, make decisions in December, because everybody that testified, including the ward 8 alderman, I believe, on one of the sites, there's no complaints that people are getting about self-service. So anyway, that's just my opinion.
I hear you, Christian, and I'm personally struggling to just to wrap my head around this and try to understand it from the different points of view. But it's not. I do understand the concept that it's not about the coverage on the particular suit for the homeowners, whatever they might have in their house. It's about, so the equipment has a range of service, I guess, and it's building capacity within that range, and we have huge numbers of more people who carry devices with them that require this service. It's mind-bending to me.
I think it's to take the burden off the towers,
mm-hmm.
where things are bouncing around because of bad service. So it's to take the burden off the towers and put them onto these little devices. And then it may not be the neighborhood that benefits, but everybody benefits.
Oh, and they were talking about West Roxbury benefiting
right.
from this. But also, they're doing this because it's easier. And they also can't get the big poles where they want them.
Well, we have trouble with them, but
But the fact that we're sitting around the table trying to still figure out, and the woman, I forget her name, that's been in representing Verizon a couple of times, the fact that we have these experts, we're still trying to figure out what the need is.
Well, I didn't hear from the experts. We got
You know, it's not a health issue. You know, we hear that all the time.
Well, that was the
that
we
can't use.
It's
about the bouncing back and forth.
I'm just saying they have not very clearly articulated to us what this whole need is all about. We think it's this, we think it's that.
We have the draft with the measures we might choose to impose here, but reading committee and with the law department and their time and resources, that we wouldn't have an opportunity this year to draft a new ordinance, but we will be working toward that. And I think a first step might be that we have to agree on what criteria we want to impose on which kinds of installations. And I actually think before we come back to this group, although you can all weigh in on this list, For putting stuff on poles. That's all this list is about, is putting stuff on poles. But there's some 70-foot monopoles that are coming our way. We don't even know how big the diameter is, and so I don't want those in the public way at all. So we might want to do defining sites where those things can go and making them very limited. And then, of course, there's a special permit process if they want to go on private property. So don't need to think about that at the moment. But then there are our ordinances, and put this stuff in our different ordinances? How does it blend into what rules we already have? So long story short, at least what I have been hearing, and maybe Alan can comment on the potential legal issue before us. What is clear that we have a lot of control until we establish a base station. But it's also clear, and so we want to be really careful about that. And maybe we want to ask this company right now, can you find alternate locations within this area that A, you're not in front of somebody's house, maybe they're on a corner or they're in some place where there's something. You can ask them right now.
That's Alan's job, is to find that.
I've raised that with them informally, with their counsel, both the placement of the attachment,
mm-hmm.
you know, keeping it away from the front of someone's house, and also some kind of commitment that they could make for them, speaking for themselves, not for any other carrier, that they would limit their attachments to what they're putting up now.
So they would agree to those conditions?
Or swap out. Yeah, I mean, they haven't agreed to it yet, but I think those are very doable.
Yeah.
For the most part, they wouldn't attach more antenna to the same pole. They could just do another pole.
So you broke that question. Yeah. You think you can get an answer from them before we meet in December?
Because I
think those
would
be two conditions we might like to put on this, is offered and closed by location. Yeah. See that they agree to a condition that they would have to come back to us for approval.
One of the problems with this is that the carrier and the city are all struggling with the fact that this law that applied to cell towers is now being applied to pole attachments.
Mm.
And with the cell tower, it's a big deal. I mean, that's what people come in with their armies of consultants, and that's where all the litigation occurs. And but yet, when you have a pole attachment, you get stuck with the same considerations. You can come up with all kinds of standards, but then if they can come in and say, hey, this is effectively prohibiting us from providing service,
I think that's a good thing.
Or they'll come in and say, you allowed the same character of facility to be put up by somebody else.
Which is again where the guidelines, if we have written established guidelines, even though we're just putting them in place now, then that argument, because we've just caught up with the technology.
They came in with consultants. I think what they did was, if you were talking about a tower, that was kind of very basic, probably subpar. There was an article of money that wasn't the most convincing presentation. They were rushed, and they're not dealing with a tower. And if you want to have that in every grant location proceeding, they have to come in and put on that kind of case if they feel that they're at risk of getting a denial and they have some, they don't have a good alternative.
Okay.
I have questions.
And then Barbara, and then Cheryl, and then Susan. I don't know.
Question for you, Alan. This is a good start of a list. It's everything that I could think of, certainly, and more. But are there other cities and towns that have already gone through this process and are ahead of the game here from where we are that we could look to what's worked for them and what they would suggest?
Mostly what we found is ordinances from out of state.
We did put this issue out on the municipal listserv.
Mm-hmm.
And the response that we got back was, thank God you could ask me a question, because you are starting to see they're all a little bit behind us.
Oh, okay.
But they are starting to approach other municipalities too.
Mm-hmm.
I also went to a seminar with the municipal group where this issue was brought up and people were struggling through. We weren't even ahead of them on the process.
So we're on the cusp of the curve as opposed to
unfortunately as usual.
Yeah. But so the other states, the states that have done this, like what, New York, New Jersey, or Idaho, or
California, Illinois,
there are
different places.
Yeah. Are the issues different in different states, or are the issues pretty much the same issues that we would be dealing with?
They're very similar. Everyone's got the same types of concerns. Too tall, it's in the wrong place.
Yeah.
Noisy.
Yeah.
It can be noisy.
Oh.
I think what we're trying to do is glean from those specific guidelines that could have the impact that we want in Newton. However, there were some places that had their own rules and regulations that we didn't see here, because they're obviously much more rural. The distance that they had set between holes and whatnot was very large.
So we've got to find somebody that has done this ahead of us that kind of looks like us.
Yeah.
And we have done extensively all of that research.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Did you find anybody?
I mean, I think there was one that you might have used more than I can remember.
That was Green Park.
Okay.
That was a pretty user-friendly one to use.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things with this is we can all come up with criteria like height, location, noise, there could be other vibration. We can come up with criteria like that, but to assign an actual value to something, it requires a little bit of expertise. We can't just like mimic what some other city or town has done without really understanding whether what they're doing makes any sense.
Can we?
Is there an outside council that specializes in something like this that if we wanted to spend the money that we could turn to?
I think I wouldn't say outside, like a consultant.
Yeah, somebody that has done this.
The issues aren't really legal.
Mm-hmm.
They're more, I think, scientific and mechanical and measuring, engineering.
Yeah, that kind of person can walk through some of the differences in facilities, based on the type of carrier. Now, you've got like the Verizon Wireless, you've got other people who are kind of carrier neutral hosts, then you've got mobility. I was just reading something about an article about mobility where they came in with an application and the community had I think required steel poles or something of that height, and they came in with wooden poles. So it was something like that. Like, you know, you might not think to question, is it wood or is it something else?
Mm-hmm.
I think having that kind of help, first of all, it would be useful, and it would also speed up the process. I think it would make it easier for you and for us to have that expertise involved.
One more question. Do we have the right to deny until we've got our set of criteria in place? Or is there a period of time by which we have to...
There's a period of time. That's the shot clock thing that Al was talking about, and we did get an extension from that to the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to be ready by the end of the year with an ordinance or even a set of criteria that we adopt leading toward an ordinance.
Yeah.
And you can't deny it just because we don't have something in place.
But that wouldn't necessarily grandfather the ability to do the things that they did on that poll if we decided that we didn't want to. If that was one of the criteria that we wanted to control.
But we could deny, and what's going to happen? The worst thing that's going to happen is that they're going to sue us. So let them sue us, and in the meantime, we have to develop our guidelines. These companies sue us all the time to not pay their fair share of property taxes, okay? Keep that in mind. They do it all the time, and they drag it out, and they drag it out, and they drag it out. So let's put the shoe on the other foot and not be rushed and come up with our own guidelines. And let them sue and see how they make out, or I mean how long it's going to take before anything else happens. So
the idea of this was to prepare us mentally for making this decision.
There's a lot to take into account. I mean, on one hand, you've got IT talking to Verizon Wireless about how to improve coverage in Newton. With South College and the village.
Well, we should put that on the table, which is
what
that
there's something about poor quality of service, lack of coverage, lack of capacity.
Well, it was down, municipal, right? No, they
sent letters to the mayor, and
okay.
We talked to Verizon Wireless engineers
trying
to come up with some solution to deal with that. So we're Verizon Wireless customers.
Well, that's what I wanted to say.
We also are.
Can't they put the public safety communication?
Put the apparatus on their own building? Instead of on poles in front of other people's.
Yeah, they could put they have plenty of buildings over at LaSalle Village that they could put a small antenna.
Put them on their own property.
Please.
So, all right, I'm sorry. I was thinking about that, and I think it was Barbara
I was just going to say, the other resident, I believe,
also mentioned that this is a very curvy, I don't know the road, but curvy road. But also she said dangerous because of its curves is her. This is another criteria to think about, like if it's going to be on a pole that's hard to get around, it's so bad.
Well, safety concerns are valid, as I understand it, and, you know, any kind of visual obstruction is certainly valid. Remember, though, we're talking about right now these very contained, subtle designs for, you know, like cylindrical devices that fit kind of neatly on one side of a pole. The stuff that's out of around the city, I've been looking at a lot of this stuff since we started this, is huge and ugly, big boxes at the top of the pole, transformers, stuff like that. So, we want to develop some criteria and be consistent about applying them. I think that's probably important. It's probably important legally, too. But we also, this matter of wanting to provide coverage generally across the city, and also the fact that we have our own business relations with the company, I think we want to be careful, right? I'm not saying we want to give stuff away. I don't mean that. I want to be careful, too, about, you know, what the rules are going to be. What I'd love to do with this current application, and you may all disagree, but I'd love to be able to ask them if they would voluntarily consider, you know, adjusting the location of these things and submitting to an agreement that they would not put additional equipment on without coming back to us. But,
yeah, I mean, they would probably have to come back anyway. So
not to us.
They
would only have to go to engineering for a permit.
Yeah,
that was clear.
That's true.
Unless they agree
we
can make it a
condition.
Yeah. They might agree just not to do it.
They might agree not to do it.
We'll put the stuff up now. We've got the right to replace it, but yeah, we're not going to add things that are going to be taller.
Not to do it, but not to ever add to it.
Well, when they were here, they explained to us that once they put it on, there really isn't enough room for other things. But when once we create a base station and technology gets smaller, they can do pretty much whatever they want with it. A couple of points. I had consultants on here. I think it's important for us to, because how can we, you know, decide the norm? Yeah, I mean, how can we decide that? But I think the fact that the laws are around towers right now, that are large and usually far away from people, I think that these are important because they're closer to people, so maybe they should have the same scrutiny as towers. But we have a list of potential criteria, so why don't we go through them and see which ones the committee would like included, and that way when we hire the consultants, they'll be able to work on it.
Why wouldn't we just do everything we can?
There
could be a downside.
Well, there's one, Alan, the one about the 100 has to be, you know, you took that out of Evergreen. It has to be 100 feet away from the home and not closer than 1,000 feet. The question is, would that fly in Newton?
What's pretty common in some of these ordinances is they'll have a standard like that, you know, something that's pretty hard to comply with, and then they'll have a kind of a safety valve provision. I mean, they're basically saying to the carrier, look, here's the rule. If you feel that this is going to prevent you from providing wireless service, come in and demonstrate that to us. Otherwise, forget it. You know, we're going to enforce the requirement unless you can show us that doing so would effectively prohibit you from providing service.
It's good to be able to do that.
There are so few houses in Newton that are 100 feet away from the street.
Yeah, I mean, someone, again, I think for the most part, the carriers don't want to get involved in litigation. But, you know, if there are requirements that are, you know, facially impossible to comply with, you know, they that may push them in that direction.
Yeah, that's kind of the one.
Right. I mean, I think you've got to be careful of having a requirement in there that is virtually impossible to do, or if you're not sure, like, well, maybe there would be one location and, you know, when the next person comes in, they've got to have a location if that one's taken out, if things are effective. So you want to be careful about something like that to too small of an area.
So the scenic road, is that an issue?
Could be.
Could be.
Oh, we don't know?
Yeah.
It's an issue.
If you want to designate, you know, if you want to put it as a criteria, you know, we prefer not to have them on scenic road.
So the fact that the scenic road doesn't mean it can't be there.
The criteria that you will consider is policy.
But if we say not on the scenic road and they come in and say, well, we've proven that we need it.
Well, some communities have, they have different, what they call tiers. Like, you might come in and say, you know, tier one, put it on a parkway, not in front of a residence, no one really cares that much. Then you go down in kind of an order of concern. Now you might say, well, residential streets, village entrances, places where you'd rather not have these things if possible. Then you might have a scenic way in there. So you can try to specify, you know, where you'd rather see these things go.
Okay.
And where you'd rather see not see them go.
You'd rather not see them anywhere.
Yeah.
So what's going forward? Sorry.
What?
Don't you finish?
Yeah.
I would rather not go through the criteria tonight.
So yeah. Okay. So let's get a specific. What would we like at the next meeting? So that's what I thought. What we were going to have at this meeting was something to look at and to vote on, but I know this is what we have so far.
We were never going to have something to vote on tonight. This is really informational to help guide our decision on the petitions that we postponed.
So the next step, are we hiring a consultant? Or, because how do we really put this together without...
We can't. So number one, yes, this meeting was trying to help guide us toward a decision in December, a month away. If we don't feel, this committee doesn't feel we're ready to do that or feel like go doing that, we're going to move toward denial. A couple things we can suggest. One is that Alan do what he says, is to pursue the petitioner on a voluntary basis to see if they will stand down in a couple of ways. You know, agree to one placement and no more without coming back to us. Agree to relocate or agree to wait on these particular locations. Two would be to ask for another postponement. I don't know, you know. In any case, I think the committee has to get together and ourselves, I mean, yes, we've had three meetings, and we had some of this material by our third meeting, but, you know, then it got better organized, and I think it's time for us to go through it. We did bring up in our last meeting the need for a consultant. I'm hoping we're getting closer to defining who that needs to be. I think Alex Cadis actually could be very helpful to us in that regard. He's the one who's having this expertise in the fire department.
Yeah, I know there's one consultant that the city used for a radio tower.
Right, you were supposed to get some information back from engineering on that person.
That person I know does this kind of work for municipalities.
Okay. We were thinking we would try to go on two parallel tracks. This was set up before us, which I hear you say, let's just test their resolve. But on the other hand, we have a longer term, and it is mind bending, and it is headache producing. So it's longer term
task to get this criteria together and get it into the form of an ordinance and applications, which I imagine are going to go through several rounds of review before we're
I've made progress on an application form and on instructions, but you really need to know what your standards are going to be before you can finalize that kind of thing.
So I didn't want to spend all night on this tonight. Are we all ready to hold this?
Yes, just one thing. I just want to share with you why I get frustrated. Here's a email that I received that last week the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court rendered a decision that clarifies that telecommunications personal property is to be taxed at the commercial instead of residential tax rate. You guys aware of this?
Yes.
So that's good news for the city.
Yes.
Because we've been taxing them at commercial, and of course the telecommunications company has been, you know, fighting us, and they've been appealing it, and they've been tying up. First, I don't think they haven't been paying us the commercial rate, and we have $1 million sitting in an account to cover interest, in addition to the overlay money that we always have. So we've got all this money tied up while they, you know, continually fight us. So I have absolutely no empathy or sympathy for them at all, and I think it's great that this decision was rendered. I don't know how much it means yet in terms of dollars and cents, but
we've been talking with Elizabeth about that.
But she doesn't know for sure yet, right, does she?
But keep in mind, this is a different organization. Verizon Wireless is not Verizon.
They're all the same.
No, they're not. They're not.
The way they sue us, they are. And where they tie us up our money, they are sued. Trust me. They tie us up all the time.
I agree they tie us up, but they're not the same company.
This isn't one of those companies. This is a subcontractor, right?
No, this is Verizon Wireless.
Wireless, really.
It's their new name.
There's a couple of things on the horizon.
There are other ones that just want the poles and then they'll rent it to Verizon Wireless.
That's a whole other matter and another set of discussions that we want to have. So I'll just mention that what I took from the law department on these host companies, so next to the host company, and there's the one that's coming in with the monopoles they want to put somewhere, is a host company, and that we're not going to be subject to the same set of rules because they are not in fact a carrier, they are a host. So we're not preventing them from providing service that we deny them.
Are they though? Because if their client can prove it, then they can.
We came to that conclusion at our last meeting.
No, but they have to go through special permit, right? Don't the monopole have to go through special permit?
Well, in my mind, the monopole wouldn't be in a public way.
No.
It would be somewhere else.
Right.
And it would be subject to development.
Where do the monopoles go?
On private property? Yeah.
Okay, but this is another subject.
Yeah.
And I think, I think we have to have another subcommittee meeting. Al's got to ask the discussions in a more, put them on the spot a little bit, maybe, between now and then. So we'll schedule a meeting the next week or so. Before Thanksgiving, maybe? Before Thanksgiving.
You can do it on Thanksgiving.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay, so I have a motion to hold from Susan. All in favor of holding this item? Ordinances be amended and establishing criteria and so forth. I won't read the whole thing. So you have very specific, and thank you, Alan. You're going to be joined by Marie Lawler for this one. You're joined by Councillor Fuller as well at this time. And we have very specific language in our packet. Proposing very specific modifications. Oh, I think that Maria made an amendment to that quite language.
Very slight language. Can you tweak a bit of language from the draft you have in your past? It's not a substantive change, just a clarification that was brought up.
So you're handing that out to us right now?
So let me just pass it down.
and I'm sure you all took a look
so
at
that was just discussing this and it was actually dated today, 11/9, so we don't get confused.
So can you just help, can you remind everyone what the two things are that we are amending?
So right now, if it was the last time, there was a much more extensive proposal before you. Since that time, I think that Alderman Lambert can verify there were a lot of issues.
Did you get one? Yes, do you have one?
Yes,
I'm relating to enforcement, where a proposal had been to bring in, to do away, or make the pilot program and actually enforce the fine. Because there's ongoing issues concerning that, that proposal has is no longer before you. And I think the council, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the council has already approved extending the pilot program for another year. So right now the proposal that Councillor Danberg is putting before you is very specific and only, pretty much only an amendment to Section 26-8, which is entitled Removal of Snow and Ice from Sidewalks in Certain Districts. Now, everyone always refers to this as the commercial snow removal, and it's pretty much for commercial properties. But what this is doing is a couple of things. It is adding to the business districts. It really only said business districts before. All properties in business districts would be required to comply with the snow removal requirements. But we're adding now mixed use and manufacturing districts, which are other commercial districts in the city. So that's one thing, just clarifying that it's all commercial districts, business, mixed use, manufacturing. And then the other thing that it's doing is adding to the second portion of that, prior to any changes, the old ordinance, or the current ordinance, applies to properties in other districts, not business districts, in other districts, which, and then it had very arcane language, situated in another business district, used for purposes permitted in other business districts, not zoned for business, but permitted in districts zoned for single, private, or general residences. So
nobody understood
that, and in fact, general and private residence districts have not been in use, I think, since 1987 with the last zoning reform. So we're going to modernize that language a bit and really just make it clear that it's pretty much commercial uses in other districts.
Regardless of whether
they're non-conforming or not, if you have a business use in a residential district, they're going to have to comply. And also picking up institutional uses in other districts, just to make it clear that those are expected to comply with these more stringent snow removal requirements also. The other thing is that this proposal would pick up most family dwellings of more than four dwelling units.
Which is the way to do it for sure.
Right.
Yeah, we're just reflecting what's done, you know.
So we're treating larger residential buildings or groups of buildings on a lot that contain more than four residential dwelling units. They're going to be treated like commercial properties. Another change is to reduce the time currently in effect for the business district, which is 24 hours after the snow stops. Reduce that to 12 hours. Mm-hmm. Another thing we would like to do, those are the major substantive changes. Other things we would like to do is to just make clear that snow removal is required on the what has previously been called the curb ramp, but we're not going to call it that anymore. We consulted with Jimmy Fairley, and the preferable term would be accessible curb ramp. So we've added that language to 26-8. It wasn't in there previously. The only other changes that are being proposed right now are to do the same housekeeping changes where we have used handicapped and just changing that to people with disabilities or person with disabilities, depending on the context. And the other housekeeping is in 26-18. That's the trial program. You've already changed it to date to 2017. But also to just change handicap programs to accessible curb ramps. So those are the proposals that are before you tonight. There is no, at this time, no change in the structure of fines proposed at all.
So I just want to say I'm hoping we can move this tonight. It's become much simpler and we're not dealing with fines and at least get this done. So, Susan, first.
So the proceeding part of the snow and ice on acceptable curb ramps, is that on corners? Is that the corner ramp?
Anyway, yeah, they would be on corners if there are some in mid, you know, mid block that you could find.
But those are primarily what now is in so many corners, these
yes.
bumpy things that have been put in.
Yeah, it, and it's, yeah.
So exactly. Who does that? Is that the city
yeah,
or is that
the property owner?
Property owner is would be responsible if it's in front of their property.
Part of the sidewalk.
Yeah, part of the sidewalk.
But if it's, I don't know if it's a part, if it's a sidewalk that the city does,
it's a commercial property.
It's a commercial property, so.
So even if the city piles snow up on the corners, they don't do that anymore.
Yeah,
and that they'll have to
say, I think that DPW can speak to that.
Yeah.
So when we plow snow, we will plow. Snow will get on the corner.
Right.
If they block, it's going to be piled there. The snow has to go somewhere. So a mid-block accessible ramp is going to get buried in snow, yeah.
And the corners?
The corners are going to be from snow. There's no way around that. We can minimize it, but there will always be that windrow that's going to end up there, yeah.
So if it's a corner lot, if it's a house in a corner lot,
this is only commercial. Only commercial.
Okay.
Commercial and institutional. Yeah.
Okay.
Which includes residential more than 4 units.
Yeah,
because if it's a complex, they would, you know, have no shoveling services. Anybody else? Barbara?
I just wondered where's my support of that over 4, because I've seen many. And the people who live there are not the owners. So when you say, oh, hey, the kids can't get by, I just rent here, you know? So it has to be known that if there is a unit with 4 or more, that obviously a management company is taking care of, probably, that they have to get that taken away. So my support for that part.
Thank you. Audio?
Is this on the whole ordinance you're asking, or just this section?
These changes, only these changes specifically that we're looking at here that are redlined.
Yeah, just the redline notice.
So the substantive changes are to only 26-8, which is the first paragraph.
All right, so then I just have either two questions or comments. The changing from 24 hours to 12 hours, it seems... That seems a little harsh to me. If we were able to get people to do what we're trying to do within 24 hours, especially in larger storms, I think we should be pleased with that. So to cut it to 12, I think is long. And then my recollection is when we first were talking about this, that the fine was originally recommended at $25, and now we're at $100.
This is only commercial.
The whole
thing is only commercial?
Only commercial.
Oh, I thought the first
section. Only commercial. Yeah. No, still, land, and large residential. In the villages.
I get it. You don't have to, I understand.
Okay. And we're not making any, they're not making any changes to the residential.
People shop.
Okay. I missed the last meeting, so it's my fault.
Only commercial. Not doing the residential. We're extending the trial for 1 more year.
This is simplified now, and the decision was made by the proponents.
So we're not finding residential people right now?
No.
We're not proposing that?
No. We're only proposing specific changes to these sections in front of us, and that's why I would like to dispose of it this evening. And if the folks who are working on this want to take up separately other matters. But one thing was to change the fines in the commercial section too, but that's not in here any longer.
No, we decided to leave it the way it is for now, and these fines reflect fines in other areas for other
and they've been in
our
ordinance for a while now.
Yes, these have been in the ordinance for many years.
We would like to simplify them as a separate item.
That's right. Okay. The thought is, and I think that we can have a separate docket item and a separate discussion on that. to see whether it would be better to have it just be $100 fine, civil offenses, first, second, and third. The police find it sometimes hard to keep track of is it a different officer that did it. So if it's $100 per event, but every day is a new event, if they don't clear it, it's much easier for them to keep track of.
Okay.
Well,
is it a new event every day or every 12 hours?
It's a new event every day. It would be. Well, it right now, that's for future discussion, but, you know, we can tweak it any way we want to tweak it.
Okay.
So what was the rationale of cutting it in 24 to 12 hours?
Is it recommended about what it is in other communities?
Yes.
You know my feeling on other communities, but
well,
there's a video about Somerville that I've never seen that you might want to look at.
Let me explain to you. People shop right after storm finishes. You go into the villages, and it behooves the stores to not only, Johnny's Luncheonette always clears everything immediately. That's clear because they want their people to be able to get into Johnny's Luncheonette, even when they can't get into anybody else. So it behooves the person to clear as quickly as possible.
I agree.
There are only a couple of places that don't clear immediately. City Corp was one of them, Walgreens, CVS, Bank of America. The bigger, the more national the company, the less likely you would have decent clearance. And so we're trying to improve that.
Okay. I think we've made the point on that, and I'm just going to click on this because we have more things on the agenda. I think.
So are you
think we get the
okay with that?
It's
a big, nasty national.
I think if people don't clear within 12 hours, it's because it was 12, it is a good likelihood that there was a major storm and it's going to take them a little bit longer. 24 hours just seems more reasonable to me.
For residential, it's certainly reasonable. But for commercial, they really have to get that stuff
cleared.
What is
it, Boston?
3 hours, and that's for residential also.
How's that working?
People
get a lot of fines.
Yep, they get a lot of fines.
$100 fine.
Yep. They also have an army of inspectors dedicated to this. But it's 3 hours, and the enforcement, at least in the neighborhood, I live in a very kind of remote little neighborhood, but they have come up to it, but I think that is done on a kind of a random basis. But they do come around and check.
Yeah, and Brookline, I think it's either 5 or 6 units and more, it's 3 hours. Usually those many of them are on Beacon Street and Big Street. But there are a lot of side streets in Brookline that have multi-unit properties, and that's
it's sort of
Brown.
The major enforcement
actually
is in the commercial.
Yeah.
Neighborhood, but, and that's the neighborhoods are
my. Are they responsible to shovel where the meters are? Because oftentimes it's impossible to get to a meter.
Get to the meter.
Have to get to the whole sidewalk, including the meter.
The ordinance says clear the whole sidewalk. But if when snow starts piling up and there's no place to put it, it kind of gets around the meters. You're required to do the best job that you can, and I think the police, if you can't get to a meter and there's the amount of snow is such that you really should have been able to clear it, then they'll come to you and they'll say clear it, or we'll come back and find you. That's pretty much how it works.
You have a motion?
I need a motion to approve this thing.
All right, I've moved to approve.
Okay.
I'm just going to think. I just need to think a little more about this 24 versus 12. That's all.
Okay. So all in favor? We have 4 in favor, and we have 1 abstention, and 2 not voting. Well, I'm trying to find if you want to move on to the next item. So, 4, 7, 1. Okay. The next item is
which we could go with 386-16, Council Crossley and Gentile. Thank you, Marie.
Thanks, Marie.
Proposing to establish policies and procedures for the use of approved MWRA, no interest. We all said that? No interest loan financing to encourage homeowners to participate in the lead service line replacement program. Okay, we ready? Wendy and I put this forward, first of all, because we heard from the controller that a decision needed to be made so that funding could be accepted by the city, and apparently that's been delayed. But nonetheless, it's going to, the decisions we have to make, which Maureen Lemieux brought up at an earlier meeting, have to do with how to offer, or whether to offer, I suppose, this money to residents for having their lead service lines replaced as a way of encouraging them to do it. And we're being given the money as a no-interest loan, as we know. And we've accepted that money as a no-interest loan, but we can't actually take it into the city until the bonding agency approves the program particulars. So we wanted to begin the conversation about what the program particulars are or may be, and also where we are in that process, because I think there will be another step or so. So Commissioner McGonigal is joining us to tell us how it is.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So there's $4 million available to the City of Newton for the MWRA Lead Service Line Replacement Program. It's a 10-year no-interest loan to the city for replacement of lead service lines from the city main to the meter in the house, the residence or business. Initially, we identified 641 potential services throughout the city. We've narrowed that down now to 587. We've gone out, we've identified these, we've marked out the locations, we've taken pictures. Our engineers are doing a cost estimate right now, which they should have to us by the end of the month. Once we have the cost estimate, construction bid documents, we'd like to put it out to bid. Right now, planning for early January. The next distribution of funds from the MWRA is in February. So we would need to have a decision by then of how we're going to implement this so the bond council could approve it and we could receive the funds. They distribute funds every 3 months. They're doing it this month. The next distribution from MWRA would be in February, as I said. We'd like to implement, have this program going in April. With completion by the end of the year.
Okay.
So the reason that we docketed this item is we already authorized us participating in the program. We already took a vote here in the full council. So we're expecting to move forward and hoping we're going to get $4 million. But it was with the understanding that the administration, whether it's through you or Maureen, would come back and say, okay, this is how the program's going to work. And we haven't seen anything. And so before we go spending money like we did on the solar tax credits, okay, which is a unfortunate disagreement that we're having, we want to make sure that it doesn't happen. We were told that we would get the plan. So have you guys, and you know what, some of us had reservations about if this was going to be grants versus loans, whatever. So is there a plan in place that for us to approve so we can all move forward and get, you know, start getting this work done?
Well, I think we would like guidance on that. We can, some communities pay a portion of the replacement. The average replacement is $4,000. I think it's Boston.
I'm sorry, but is that from the main all the way to the house?
Yes, okay. That's the average.
And customer portion.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So the customer would be responsible for their portion. So from the back of sidewalk into the water meter in their house.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's just an average cost of $4,000. So how we implement that for cost share or spread that out over time. Again, if there's something that we should come up with, I wasn't. My understanding was that we would bring this. Here's the information, and the council would determine if there would be cost sharing.
So other than deciding if it's going to be a loan, cost sharing, grant, whatever, is there really anything else? It's pretty straightforward, isn't it?
I think it is, except that things programmatically you might like to understand what it looks like on the ground, and a couple of things. So there's the private portion and the public portion, and you can cost divide those two things.
Yes, we'll cost divide those. So we'll understand the city's cost and then the residents' cost.
Okay, so it's the residents, we're paying the city's cost anyway, on the part of the service connection we own. Mm-hmm. And then the question is, and you're going to get accurate bids on the cost for each property that belongs on the private side?
Yes, but the way we want to bid this, otherwise we'll need hundreds of line items. We would bid the replacement of the line and then backfill loam and seed. So if someone had custom landscaping, trees that were in the way, walkways, they would be responsible for that. This is how we normally do this program, so it wouldn't be a change either way. So that's how we would propose that.
Okay. What if you did the street and you don't find lead? You find that in fact what you suspected might be lead isn't lead. What happens?
So what we're proposing is that we're going to go like this and put in new bucket. It's going to happen. Well, but also, it's going to happen. We're going to have, again, these are just, because we don't have a definitive record, we're assuming that it's lead. If it was in this time period, before 1930, the construction.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What NWRA said is if you excavate and you find it's not lead, they will pay for the excavation and the backfilling, but they will not pay for the line replacement. We are proposing that the line replacement still be done, and the city carry that portion, put it into the loan program, because what that's also going to help us with unaccounted for water. Also, to make a connection of our new line to an old line, we're setting ourselves up for a leak.
Yeah.
So again, we would recommend that we replace that line regardless. And again, that portion would only be the line, which is actually the most expensive part of this is the excavation. So the cost to replace the line is not the larger portion of that.
Well, can I just finish on that? So I just want to make sure again, I know you told us this the last time, but from the main in the street to the customer's property line, okay? We are going to pay for that,
yeah.
And it's going to come out of this program.
Yeah.
Okay, the money's going to come out of the program. And then from here to the customer's house, we're going to replace that. It's also going to come out of the program. But the decision that the guidance that you need from us is whether the cost of this run from the property line into the house, if that is going to be a loan or if there's going to be some further cost sharing.
Yeah.
So, all right. So I just want to make sure. So, one could make the case that we're already cost sharing by taking care of this section. But anyway. So, all right. Thank you.
Okay.
Can
I just ask a clarification? Okay. And then I have Vicki up next. And then I have Lucy.
Is the average of $4,000 is that for the whole thing or is that for one of those halves?
That's the residential portion.
One of the halves. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. And that's really
what
varies the most.
Right. You never know.
Okay. So I have
Vicki
and then Lucian and then Susan.
Does the engineering department have an accurate accounting of who has ever had those pipes replaced and when?
We have fairly good records. Again, these we went through all the records, and these are the 641 were services that we couldn't identify. Either they weren't labeled what it was, or it is lead. It's labeled lead.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because, for instance, 15 years ago, I was having my wall redone, and the mason made the suggestion that while he was ripping the wall apart, that we also have the water line replaced. It never would have occurred to us to do that, and so we did it. So I think we've got 15-year-old pipe there. But so you, everybody that's ever done that, we know who they are, so that if that house, let's say, has turned over, and then the new owners weren't told that it was replaced 2 owners ago or so, we will be able to. So if they call in and they say, I'd like to have my pipe checked and or replaced, you can tell them, well, we have a record.
Yes, we've sent all these people certified letters.
Okay. So, and they've already been sent?
Yes.
So I would have gotten one?
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe get months ago.
So you don't have a letter?
No. Okay.
No,
you already had your line replaced.
Correct. So she
wouldn't have gotten it.
Right. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I thought you meant you sent certified letters to.
What the department, a lot of work the department did this summer with interns, I believe, partially, was to dig really deep into the city's archive of information on every property, when it was built, whether or not a service was replaced and so forth, to come up with every property they suspected might have
lead, and those were the ones that got the certified letters.
Yes.
Okay.
But your information, if you look tomorrow, it'll show that you had that work done. Their record keeping is
good,
especially within that time frame.
Yeah.
Is pretty accurate.
Yeah. Okay.
No, that's how we were able to narrow this down to just 641. I think now it's 587.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Okay. Roseanne and then Susan.
Couple of questions, Tim. So this is a $4 million loan. It's not giving us the money.
No.
They expect us to repay the $4 million 10 years from now.
10 years, no interest, correct.
So we're not, there's no free money here.
No.
Just, second is if, roughly $4,000 and there's 587 homes. You do the math, that's $2.348 million that we think is the residential cost. Do we think the city cost of, as Lenny described, getting from the city main to the property line is going to take that other $1.7 million?
No, we're assuming that that's going to be the total cost. $2.4 million, if you use that number. If you said roughly 600 homes at $4,000 a piece, that would be the total.
So let me just ask one more question. There's a portion of the cost that's on city land, and there's a portion of the cost that's on private property. The two together, do you think, will only cost $2.4 million?
That's what we're
saying. So even though they're loading us $4 million, we think we're only going to use $2.4 million of it.
Right. So the reason they assume, they take a percentage of our total services in the beginning. And that was about 1,200 homes. So that's where they came up with the approximate, was a little less than that. But that's where they came up with the $4 million.
We got to get these numbers right.
Yeah.
Earlier, we all heard that that the average for the connection from the property line to the person's house, that the average of those bills would be $4,000. So, Dan is saying 4,000 times 600 homes is $2.4 million, but we also were led to believe that there's another cost to go from the property, the homeowner's property line out to the main, so that and that sum of money was also going to come out of this program. So what did we miss here?
Well,
isn't it? Maybe I wasn't clear, but usually whenever there's a replacement, the replacement is from the property line, as I said, to the water meter.
Right.
But
and that average is $4,000.
That's $4,000.
All right. So, but there's also obviously another cost from the property line out to the main.
Correct.
And what's that?
So, and that much is going to come out.
It depends on it. There's sometimes the water mains across the street. So again, that's what we're doing right now. This is the engineering we're doing. I'll have those cost estimates broken out by the end of the month.
Can you use the $4 million
for that too? Yeah. Yeah. So
that's what the plan is. I'm sorry if I wasn't clear with
you. But do you think that it's like just as much on this side as this?
No, I think it would be significantly less in the street.
And plus not everybody's gonna opt to do it. So I think what you're getting at is $4 million gonna cover all the work, but it is less money to do it usually, because I mean I had it done not too long ago. It's less money to the from the property line to the street connection, and I don't think not everybody's going to opt. So I think we should be comfortable that there'll be enough.
And there are also some of these that we've already done our portion of. Anything that's been cleaned and lined. So even though we're saying 587, that's not 587 on our part.
Mm-hmm.
That number is lower.
So.
And just trying to think about this, it is the possibility if we want to just pay for these, do we philosophically think we the city made the mistake of putting in lead lines, so therefore we the city should pay for the entire cost? Or do we think differently and that we need to repay these monies in 10 years so that the homeowner, we were all part of the system back in the 1920s and 1910s, and these lines are in and lines now have to be replaced, and the homeowner, just as if there was a leak in it or if 5 years ago they happened to change their line and it was lead, they still pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
How do we philosophically think through,
well,
I'm a
tenant
of the $4 million and
I'd
be interested in...
Well, I'd like to say something about that. I'd actually like everyone to be weighing in on what they think the system ought to be, because I think that's why we're here. And then I think, we're not going to vote on something. I think we're going to send it to finance. Because it's really a question for finance that once we agree with the with it programmatically here. That's my thought anyway.
But one last question, and then a year ago, if there was a lead water line on somebody's home, they would have paid to have that line replaced.
Right.
It wouldn't have had anything to do with.
Right.
Yeah.
Financing it or paying it?
And probably the whole run.
Well, here's part of the city.
Well, yeah,
part of the city's lead and copper plan, which we must submit to the DEP, part of that says that if we find a lead service line, we will replace it at the city's cost. We've done about 38 of those since, I believe, 2005.
That's if you happen to be in there. Anyway,
if we were in there and we found it, we were required through our lead and copper sampling plan to replace that.
And just one more point of clarification. Do we, the city, always do the replacement for all private homes to the city line, or do people hire their own contractors and we just have a connection or? Who's been doing the work for the last
month? Historically, what we've done is people will hire their own contractor to excavate. Right. We will install the line, our utilities.
And so we've taken out the old lines, and therefore it's been
aware of
when
the
line.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ben. Huh. So I think the 38 cases are unusual in that most when the property is transferred, when homeowners have a problem with the service line or whatever, they initiate, and whether it's lead or not, they pay for their portion. It was going to be my inclination to say, of course, the city pays for city side, we would have to anyway, and we offer the funds to the homeowner for the same at the same deal that we're getting.
No interest for 10 years.
And if we can separate those costs nice and cleanly, that seems like a nice clean offer to me.
Yeah, that's the way we set up this investigation, to have our portion separate.
I don't know how it reduces the waters, or if it does. I don't think it's the city's fault that, you know, lead was used, lead, copper, whatever was used in the olden days. But, you know, we're taking advantage of this program to encourage people to, and ourselves to clean it up now. So that seems like a good deal to me. I don't know if anybody else disagrees. But let's see. Okay, so as we go around the table, I think I have Susan and now Cheryl could be weigh in on that too.
Well, I think it sounds very fair to me. I mean, sometimes these things happen when a program comes up that is slightly different from what used to happen 10 years ago, but I think it's okay. I mean, I think it's okay. People understand the program happened. So I think it sounds fair to me. I just wanted to ask about the 580, now I understand how you found the 587 homes. So there was it a certain period of time when you used lead?
Yes, we didn't find any lead prior to, after 1930, I'm sorry. So we went through all of our records. We didn't see lead being used after 1930.
So the house was built before 1930?
Then we went in and looked at every record.
And only then you wrote to the people who had lead lines that you knew?
Yes, we sent everyone certified letters. And we hand delivered letters also to people that didn't respond.
And have they been asked to this point to say whether they want to participate or not?
No, we've let them know that this is an investigation process to determine the program to replace their lead service line.
Okay. Okay. It seems like, I mean, I understand that it may not be fair 100% to others who have already done it, but, you know, that's
water under the bridge.
Yeah.
So, but you said that we fixed them in the past with our money.
Yes.
38. So we've done that, and there might be other people there who have found their own and done their own.
Yes.
But in the past, we did it. So now that we know there's a lead problem, we're not going to do it. We're gonna just.
That would, if they happen to be in the street already, though.
There were 38 cases of over, I don't know how many years.
I believe it was, I don't quote me, it was at least 2005. It may have been prior to
where
that.
There was a law where if you were doing other work,
when we had to submit a lead and copper sampling plan, which we're required to do.
So you don't have to do that anymore?
Yes,
we still do.
We'll have to change that when we put this program in place. We'll have to resubmit our lead and copper sampling plan to the DEP.
It will include this, and then in the past they've required us to pay for it, and now we're not
going
to.
Well, now we're going looking for them. In the past they told us if you come across them,
okay,
you need to offer replacement.
So, I don't know. I mean, I kind of feel like we should be paying for it if we've done it in the past, and we have just identified them like you've identified it in the past. However, it is $4
million.
And especially with all the publicity we've had about lead in drinking water, I don't know, it seems like if we were required to do it before, we should maybe do it now.
It's only 38.
Right. Yeah.
Hundreds and thousands of service line replacements that have happened in the same time period that are done by private property owners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we did ours.
We did ours.
For many of you have done your so I think they're next. Are you all set? So?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm thinking about it all because one thing that came to mind before, and we talked about this in finance, right, was not this particular, but in general, was the portion from the city part to the home, that home owner portion if that was split between the city and homeowner was another way that was sort of helping them and really encouraging them to do it, that they do have some portion of the payment. That was one thought. And then I just wanted to ask also if there is a home that cannot afford even a 0% loan, would they have the option of applying to have a 2-year grant if they could show that even at 0%?
Their hardship, would the hardship be part of the program?
Well, we would have to determine that.
Right. But we would determine if that could be a part of it.
Right. This program is just all the lenders are is just applying that interest loan.
That's just something that has to have
it.
Right.
That we would discuss, right? That there could be a family that just, even with 0% interest, that's not something that they could afford, but they would like very much to get rid of the rent.
First of all, there, as to whether or not it, there should be cost sharing from the property line to the house, knowing how many people over the years have replaced their water line and paid the full cost, and I'm not 100% sure, but may have paid the whole cost for the entire run out to the main. Mm-hmm. I think we've done that. I think we used to do that. Mm-hmm. If somebody grants that I want to replace my water line, I believe we had to. We may well have gotten charged the whole run, but anyway, regardless, I know we were charged the full cost. So I think that being able to secure a no interest loan to somebody, I think it's reasonable to expect that they would pay it back over 10 years at no interest. So would we talk about placing or doing this through the betterment, like a betterment process?
I believe we'd have to confirm with law that we could do that.
$100
But we could do 4 water bills a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it'd be $100 a water bill for 10 years.
I think for those of you that are concerned, and I heard some concerns from Barbara and Cheryl. I think doing it as a betterment, it will be more beneficial to the homeowner than putting it on their water bill. Just off the top of my head, I think it softens the blow. I think it softens the blow even more. Or if they were to sell the property at some point over the 10 years, that then this could be negotiated with the buyer.
Uh-huh.
So I think the betterment would better serve people.
I'm sorry, Lucas. I guess I just want to understand one more time. Annually, we have to file the support to found the red line, just identify it, and note that we have paid for the replacement. Why does that change with this program going forward? It sounds like we're still going to have to notify the state that there are red lines, and instead of finding it while we were excavating it, we found it because we looked in our files more and figured out there were lines.
I just want to understand what's the legal distinction between the two, and is that really reduce us from the obligation to pay for the replacement? Because we weren't looking. It's not really a legal question. I mean, I think that after Flint, Michigan. The idea is we want to try to eliminate all sources of lead. I mean, at one point, lead was great to use for pipes because it was much more pliable than the stuff that we have to use today. But this idea of going out and locating and finding the pipes that have lead in your community is a new one. You know, one of the other tools that we had to deal with it was sort of this
In the event that you find something when you're excavating, you're going to be required to replace it. So the program, it is different because we're doing so many of them at one time, and we're not sort of randomly. We've done a lot of work to sort of locate where they are and figure out, you know, who might have a lab location. And we probably over-included in the numbers that Tim has talked about. But it's really a policy decision to determine, you know, you feel more like, you know, we should be out there paying for the whole thing, or, you know, if anybody else had an issue, you know, lots of us have replaced our lines and, you know, maybe they were delayed and we paid for them ourselves, so.
Okay.
So, I think that what the state is doing is they realize that this is a bigger problem now than we probably realized in the past. They want us to actively identify these instead of just sort of bumping into them. So they're encouraging us to do our due diligence to find these lines. The reason they're coming up with this program is they're realizing that by doing this, it could be expensive if, in fact, the state were going to require us to replace all these. So they're offering this money to make the program work instead of asking, you know, the cities and towns to bear the full cost. That's what I'm interpreting they're trying to do. And then morally, you know, if you feel as though that the city has a responsibility, I mean, where do you draw the line? I mean, do we start to do lead paint testing in people's houses and saying, you know what, we're going to pay to remove the lead paint? So, again, you know, I don't want to go there. I don't want to go there. So I think that it's fair that with the no-interest loan, and I think it's defensible.
Scott? So if you're looking for feedback, and putting it on the table, but I could be open to other suggestions. As Councilor Fuller said, it's not free money. We did the 38 while we were there, so I could see that why we did that. Since I've been a counselor, and every time I've inquired of a homeowner as to what's going on, whether it be a clog or a lead line or whatever it may be, it's always, you know, you're responsible from the house to the property line. We're responsible for the property line to the main. I think that's cleaner. I think it's easier for us to explain. And I like Lenny's suggestion about the betterment process. I couldn't tell Lenny if you're saying that they should be responsible from the main to the house or the property line to the house.
From the property line to the house.
Yeah. So that's kind of how I heard you mention something though about we used to do the whole, or we made them pay for the whole thing.
Yeah, I may not be sure. I'm not 100% sure.
I that's why I was saying in my experience, it's always been, there's been that separation, you know, that is inquired of people. You know, and they'll argue, well, it's not in my sense. Well, you're still required. You're, you know, from here to here, here to here. So I just think that's easier for us once this program rolls out. It's easier for us to try to explain, you know. So that's okay. How I would suggest that we do it. But I can be open to
okay.
I agree that it's not free money. It's money that is being made available to us so that we can encourage this to happen and hopefully make it happen with everybody. And I think that if there are people who are in circumstances where they absolutely cannot pay this, the senior center, they are the ones that screen for things like reduced price oil and deferral of taxes and that kind of thing. And I think that we could easily just have the application process be the same. Most of these people are probably going to be seniors anyway that would have the problem. But I think that a 10-year no interest loan is a very good deal. Most people would be inclined to take advantage of that. When we did it, a number of us I think have done it, we just did it because we wanted to get rid of the lead. But so I would go along with it being a betterment too. It's a good idea because it's deductible on your.
Okay, so we seem to be coming around to using the no interest 10-year loan option for the private portion and as a betterment. I don't think we solve the how we determine if someone is in a hardship situation, a financial hardship. I don't think we figured that out yet. I'm not sure what program helps us identify those people, but
they would make a request.
You use the same criteria
as the decision. It's a very cut and dry for the exemption.
We have certainly seen it.
Okay.
So you're going to send it to finance?
Well, that's my. Let me just hold that thought for a second. Carol had one more question.
Scott brought up a good point because I have a constituent who is complaining about a tree that the roots, it's a city tree, but the roots are going into her pipe, and her pipe's clogged up and is ruining her business.
The water pipe?
The water pipe.
That's probably
sewer. Sewer pipe.
Okay. Yeah.
But either way, it's a pipe that our tree is wrecking, and we're telling her that it's her responsibility.
I want to hold that to the point where we talk about sewer laterals.
Okay, but it's relevant because it's from the property, and it's your responsibility for anything from the property line to your house. So
she can petition to have the tree taken down, or
it's healthy. Yeah.
She can still petition
and
to
have
do
someone
it.
Look at it.
But the truth is, her line is broken. Otherwise, the tree.
Right. She's going to be on the tree.
Yeah.
So who would
we really have a conversation?
It isn't a 75-year-old.
How much is it?
$150.
No.
No.
But this is another story.
It's a nice story.
The moral of the story is, we do require people to deal with this, everything from the street in.
From the property line in.
Right.
So, although you own your sewer line all the way to the main, which is, I don't know why it's done that way, but it is.
Okay.
But really a separate conversation.
So maybe,
we should have Mark Welch coordinate with the where the water lines at. Not that tree there.
We're going to send us, so the way we put this item down here is we wanted to have this discussion, and I think it does provide guidance to the department. But there's the matter of writing up the program and determining the details and how that gets moved forward. So I would suggest this would go to finance with something specific from the administration.
And then to the full board for its approval?
Yeah.
Okay. I think that makes sense. The only thing that we're going to ask for in finance is, I'll be curious as to the accounting on this. Because, I guess we do this all the time, but we're going to need to collect these betterments and put them into a fund so that when the $10 million comes due, we have the money. You know what I'm saying? And so that's really, that's a question for David Wilkinson. So we're going to, I just want to understand how we're going to handle the accounting.
Okay. I suppose what we should do is hold this here pending the administration bringing a written proposal forward.
Can I just ask, are you expecting the proposal to come here, or are you expecting the proposal to go to finance?
I would expect it to go to finance, but I'm not sure about, I don't want to vote this NAN, so I think there's nothing to approve, so I'm thinking we should hold it until there's something specific.
But they're looking for guidance.
I would keep it on your docket until you have seen the actual proposal from the administration so that everybody in this committee is comfortable that it says what the consensus of the committee is, and then you can NAN it.
And you're going to want the report to MAF anyway, and they're not going to NAN it and finding it.
Well, that's what
if
I'm
they
thinking.
Act on it.
So then, I think if we're going to see it again here, whenever you're ready, but sufficiently ahead of, and I'm not sure you guys are law rights or who your finance people, you need to have it come here and go to finance sufficiently ahead of a council meeting so that you can accept those funds in February.
But I mean, alright, but you're still saying the same thing. I don't want to slow it down. So you're not saying it's got to come back here to PF and
well,
then go back?
I'm going to dispose of it consistent with how finance is going to dispose of it.
You're gonna see the policy, and we will vote it in finance. You'll be able to see it, and once you're comfortable with it, you can poll it for to approve it, or you could poll the committee to NAN it, either one. But you're going to see it. I just think that where they're trying to roll this out sooner rather than later, that we don't need to have it come back here and then to finance. I think finance could at least
understand. I agree. We're reasonably well in consensus. Okay. All right. Therefore, we're going to hold it for now. And then we'll hold the committee at the full council meeting, whatever it comes to us.
Okay.
So, have a motion to hold?
I'll move to hold.
So, if you could let the administration know that we would like to take this policy up, not at this next finance meeting, but at the meeting after, the next meeting after that. So we can get this done before the end of the year for you through the full council.
And if you could describe what you're going to use for high fit criteria, or who's what's your process for that?
Okay.
So we have a motion to hold, all in favor? And it's unanimous, 7-0. Thank you. I have an agenda. Sorry about that. I'm really trying to manage this. So, item 35-16 is Public Facilities Committee requesting discussion with the Administration and Public Buildings Department, who's not here, about the Community Solar Share Program, which intends to provide credits resulting from solar power generated at 70 Elliott Street to qualifying low-income residents. And I know that Donald and Khan is joining us.
Is there any
backup for you? Well, let me just lay out a couple things.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that there was nothing in the packet on this, and there's a note out only.
Did you see something? Or did you?
Yes, I sent a note out to the committee this afternoon, which I understand was late. It was a bit of a difficult week, I think. And it had it has the item that Brenda and I put before the law department subsequent to a meeting last week where we met with law and Dave Wilkinson and Lenny and I, and law was Donna Lynn, Rita, and Alan Randall. So we talked about this item. We requested a formal opinion from the law department as well as from the Department of Revenue on whether the mayor may unilaterally make a decision like this, which involves, in a way, transfer of city resources. And really this came about because all of a sudden there was an announcement of this program and we only heard about it in the news. And we do understand that it involves giving away a portion of the solar energy that one of the sites that we approved. And we approved it, I believe, with the understanding that it was going to buy down the city municipal electrical bill. Although that was not stated as a condition of our approval, it was certainly discussed.
Yeah.
It surprised us. And so the general feeling from a number of colleagues that this was not a good process, that a discussion should have been had to describe the program and what people were thinking about and how it worked and how it would be administered and all those good things. And
some of us felt that there should be an agreement that we should go forward with such a program. It might be the best program in the world, but we're trusting the process. So as you can see from what I sent out, or you could see it on your iPhones and both you and Anne read it, we got a memo back from Dave Wilkinson after the law department, and he had a conference with the a conference call with DOR. who, as you see, the DOR takes the position that since the energy credits are not tax receipts, they do not believe that the state municipal finance laws apply. Twice with no appropriation or approval of city council is necessary for the mayor to enter into a transaction like this with the electric company to assign credits to low-income using residents. And DOR also took the position, I'm putting this into the record, that as long as the solar credits are assigned exclusively to low-income residents, the public purpose is satisfied. Although they do acknowledge that an argument could be made that the state legislative approval might be necessary. Bottom line is they're not raising objections to the transaction and law will write us an opinion on the map.
I've seen a draft of one circulating.
I knew it was going to be tough to get it in time, so that's why I understand. And that's okay. I think Mark said this very distinctly. Mark Laredo was one of the folks who, right away, asked about this program when it was announced. He couldn't be here tonight, so he writes, I understand that the Department of Revenue has stated that City Council approval is not required for the administration's plan to transfer credits that the city receives for solar power to individual residents. First, while that is the opinion of DOR, that does not mean the court would agree, and I think a valid argument can be made the other way. More importantly, as a matter of good public policy, transferring benefits that has financial value from the city's coffers to individual residents, however noble the cause may seem, is a matter which the city council should be reviewing and approving before it is implemented. And suggested as part of this process, we should be receiving a full explanation of the proposed program from the administration. And I would say that is how a number of us feel, and so I'm going to go to Len first.
So I agree with Mark that we should get a full explanation of how the program is supposed to work. And my understanding is that there is a memorandum of understanding or something that's going to be entered into, which I think that we should receive and we should be asked to approve.
Have the carports been installed yet?
They're under construction right now.
So there's nobody here tonight from public buildings. These things aren't even installed yet. So I think we have a little bit of time. So we need to get public buildings here. I don't know why they're not here. And I would like us to see if we can come to some kumbaya agreement with the administration that at a subsequent meeting, either the next one or whenever you can fit it in, that they get in here and that the administration gives us, you know, explains what they're planning on doing and ask us for approval through the memorandum of understanding or whatsoever. I also want to just run this thing by you quickly. This is out of the school department's report on their operations. It says they're short in utilities, and it says there were a number of efficiency and solar projects integrated into the FY17 budget for electricity. At this point, some of these projects have been completed, but usage to date does not reflect budgeted savings. So I think that there's a lot, you know, there's a lot for us to learn and to see how things are going to work. And if, you know, if the solar panels up at Elliott Street don't pan out, how's it going to affect the program? So it should be in the public eye. It should be transparent. So I would suggest that we hold it tonight and allow maybe the president and the chairs of the respective committees to try and prevail upon the administration to getting in here and explaining the program and involving us in development of it, which, as you say, could be a tremendous program. Who knows?
So I'd like to add to that. I agree that I don't want to belabor that this evening, that we could do a full explanation. I hope the administration will accommodate that.
And, you know, what bothers me most about this, the fact that it didn't come before, is there were clearly, we assumed, you know, our bad, information that this power was going to be used to buy down our municipal electricity demand, whether it's with the schools or here or wherever. I've read that before too. You know, I suppose the way we could handle this going into the future, because I don't want to compromise future solar installations. I think most of us feel that most of the installations are extremely beneficial to the city. But I don't think we'd feel the same way if we thought that we were going to be giving away the benefit of the reduced municipal electricity. I think we do also need to be looking at the merits of any particular program that we might be using. This may be a good program, and I now, for once, understand that there is not an administrative burden on the city, which is a huge question for me. I would question the benefit of the program, because it offers no incentive or buy-in to the people who are giving this to, and I question the fairness of it as well. When you talk about, on the one hand, using the city asset that benefits everyone, because, you know, this is the public resources, and we're supposed to be managing them for the public at large. And if, you know, if we benefit $50,000 worth of electricity, we buy another, you know, police officer or whatever. I think those are really important conversations to have out in the open.
But we originally heard, we don't know if this is true or not, that the city was planning on giving the credit to Upper Falls residents only. That was.
Well, I never heard that until we had that discussion.
Right.
Why? Was near there?
I don't know. See, this is the information that we need. It's not so much public building as it is we need Joe Ferguson and we need Andy Savage.
And definitely
because they're the ones that run these programs.
You talk about, I would love to see the cost, I mean, if they could give us cost benefit, how much did it cost us to do it? And what are we getting from it, and we're giving it away. So the whole thing is finances.
Well, just to be clear on that, and I know people want to say stuff, but when we were determining whether or not to approve those solar installations, particularly because we had a couple that were contentious, and then there were these community presentations, and members of the Energy Commission came to those. They asked the question first, and then it was regularly provided to us exactly how much power generation was expected from each site, and therefore, if everything was up and running, which for phase one and phase two is supposed to be by March or April of this coming year, that we still wouldn't be satisfying as much as 30% of our municipal electricity demand. So, and I thought that was really important information to keep sort of tabs on, to see where we were in the process in terms of making that investment. I'm sorry, Vicki and Scott.
Yeah. The only thing that I'd add to all of the discussion, and I think I agree with what everybody has said, is that it seems like an example of not having caught up of a technology that the laws haven't caught up to yet, where we have laws that say that the city cannot, or the administration can't give away other assets. They can't give away the furniture and electronics and other things. Mm-hmm. But there is nothing that specifically targets this thing because it's a new technology that just isn't mentioned in the law.
Well, we can also condition our approval on making sure that the credit goes only to the city. We could do that if we really need to.
So I think that, you know, this is a larger conversation, clearly, that needs to be had at some level, whether it's on the municipal level or on the state level. But you can't you can't just give away this table. It's an asset. And yet a solar credit is it's an asset. It's an asset to the city.
But again, according to DOR, the city can do it.
That's their opinion.
Because it's not a fan.
Okay, Scott?
Just quickly, so when the program did get rolled out, there were a number of colleagues who had reached out to me about some concern and how come this wasn't at the table. I think in a subsequent call that we had with the mayor, he did advise that the finance chair had already talked to him, but we had also said, for many of the reasons that you stated, you know, folks want to understand the parameters of it. Some folks may not have voted for the solar program in general if they knew that this was happening, albeit great idea, just didn't know enough about it. And the mayor explained that he would happily have folks here to talk about it. I'm just not sure what the expectation was for tonight. I don't know. I mean, I didn't fall through to say, is someone going to be here? I don't know.
No, I think someone was vetted. I think we had to take a couple of steps first.
Right. So the point, I guess, we're trying to say is they said they would happily have someone here to walk through all of this with us. So that was what was explained to us.
Okay.
And just the last one, sorry. Yes. And if it were, even though DOR says that this might be an argument to be made that you'd get state approval, What would the state approval be?
What
do you mean?
We would get state approval,
I'm sorry. I read it quickly today, but the email, I believe it went out from Dave Wilkinson. I don't have it.
No,
an argument could be made.
No, it was like a separate issue. And there was a thought that, first of all, does giving these credits to a certain segment of the population meet the guidelines of municipal finance law?
Right.
So that was the one question that DOR was asked to answer. But then there was something about this kind of a program possibly needing the approval of the state legislature
right.
to implement.
And that's what I'm trying to understand.
And that one we have not pursued at all.
No, I don't understand it, or how to pursue it yet, but it's kind of a sentence that suggests that as long as the solar credits are assigned exclusively to low-income residents, a public purpose is satisfied, DOR says. And then they say, although they do acknowledge that an argument could be made that state legislative approval might be necessary.
That's what I'm asking, like what?
To engage in such a program,
I'm just trying to...
You don't, like you need a home rule legislation to do the program. And I think it was possibly David Wilkinson that raised that point,
okay.
In addition to municipal finance law.
Yeah.
So when you put it back on the agenda again, and we can double back, I'm sure the chairman of finance will say, this is the meeting that we expect someone to be here to discuss this.
Right. Okay.
And it would be good to have an opinion on whether we would have to get home rule petition.
The legal department giving us a written opinion on whether the mayor may act unilaterally. So that was the request to them. You'll cover that part too. Yeah, I don't. I'm not sure that is something that, because I was there for the phone call also. I'll talk to Dave Wilkinson about that part of it, because I don't think that's exactly what we said on that. Okay, I'm...
Is Regina
still
on there?
Okay.
Just have an answer.
I'll move hold
if you want.
Thank you. I have a motion to hold from Lenny. All in favor? Thank you for getting me
out
of it. Wait, we're getting a lot done, yeah? Yeah. I know the whole department is outside, but I would like to let this CPW go, so I want to look up this next item, and I'm not sure we'll be able to vote this tonight. Thank you, Donnelly, I know it's late. 384-16, this is the vote of the mayor requesting authorization to appropriate and expend $71,000 from free cash for the purpose of construction of for the purpose of construction, I have an observation on the Greenway walking corridor. Do I remember what this is? The Greenway project is in my ward, obviously, and it's something very dear to me. But I knew there was an issue with this particular structure that was supposed to be built by the original contractor who fell down on the job. Mm-hmm. And it was also supposed to cost a whole lot less money for us to do it, like it was $25,000 or something that was estimated. But it didn't meet the code, and an initial estimate came in even much higher than this. But I was surprised actually to see it coming at this point. I guess I wasn't sure that it would be acceptable to spend this kind of money on this. And there's a bunch of, I have constituents who would love to see this done. The observation deck that was built as part of an old bridge, refurbishing part of an old bridge, halfway across the river, because Needham won't meet us at the other half of the way. Which is something I was hoping the administration might be able to reach out to Needham and make that happen, so it's actually a useful amenity. And right now it's fenced off, padlocked, and so forth, because it's totally unsafe.
Do you have anything special?
Nope. I'm sorry? No. This is just so there's no detail on this at the moment. Is another thing. But I wanted to put it out there because I know people who just think this is very important as one of the pieces that completes the Greenway as we know it. But there's some issues with it, and I just want to be really straightforward about that, even though it's in my ward and I care about this Greenway. So, Commissioner McGonigal.
Thank you, Master. So first of all, I apologize for not putting the specs in there. We do have them. We put this out to bid. Initially, we did ask for quotes on this. The lowest quote came in at $85,000. So we did put this out to bid. The low bid was $66,000 to do this.
What does it look like?
What is it, a deer skin?
What does it look like?
It's just a deck. It's 7.5 feet wide by 24 feet long with 3.5 foot railings. The problem is that it's on the old railroad bridge, which is over the Charles. So the Conservation Commission requires netting underneath during construction. We need to remove the old railroad ties, which are on the bridge, which are hazardous waste. So it's a little more involved than there was. Well, it's just a deck. Well, yes, it is. But it also needs to be engineered and fastened to the bridge. So it's a unique structure.
And I want to be very clear again. So the original contractor was going to do this for free.
For free. And took the ties out. It has it as waste ties out.
Yeah, and they did. Right. And they built the structure on top of it. Which is
right. And as everyone
unsafe.
Might remember, we've had to, and I think this is a fabulous, the Greenway itself is fabulous, and it's being used by the budding developers, and they're contributing to it, and it's a way for pedestrians. It's all good. This piece, however, I want to say that
what was the extra cost because they didn't do the job right? We had we appropriated
not
the
not
money.
Not as much as this.
Was it like $20,000?
$20,000 was for the removal of the ties that were already there that were stockpiled from the Greenway itself. They never removed the ties on the railroad bridge.
Was that the only cost you had?
DPW did the rest of the work in-house.
Okay.
There were material costs and labor costs.
Not
excessive. We used material that we had. We used our excavate for a base material.
Okay.
So there was minimal cost except for the removal of the
ties. I love it. You know that. All right.
Since we don't have a picture of it, I'm trying to picture it in my mind's eye. Is this a bridge that's going to go out halfway into the river again in the hopes that Needham would someday go to the other half?
Yes, and I spoke with Needham and they are adamant about not doing it.
And they're so.
So I have the design here. If it's okay, we have.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, you know what?
Okay.
Let's hear from Bart first because.
I'm not going to say it wrong.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'm not sure we're going to be able to vote this tonight because I'm just, but, and there's my ward, so I'm going to, excuse me, you go next.
So, one question is why doesn't the meeting just not there? Why do they don't want to spend the money or what do you even?
They want the Greenway to be used as a transportation hub, is what I was told. They have no interest in making it a Greenway for walking.
Okay.
Cycling.
Okay. So they don't want to say
they have a vision of a shuttle service, which is
okay.
Their vision.
Okay. We have people in the ward that would like the same thing. Yes.
And by transportation hub, what do you mean?
If they envision a shuttle or something of that nature,
what kind of shuttle?
Dedicated to
like a bus.
Okay.
So that would go over the bridge? Would go over the bridge?
Folks, they would like an extension of the Green Line to come into Needham. Needham, as you know, is very interested in building this commercial base, and they see this as something very beneficial to them. And even though it might not be in our lifetime that the state is going to pony up this kind of investment, They don't see a temporary use, but I don't know that there's been a full court press kind of there's been citizens who have asked for this or me sitting down with one of the selectmen and talking about this who is particularly opposed to it. I don't think it's been really considered, and I think what you might ask is how useful is this expenditure of money for an observation desk if we can't put together some kind of an agreement with Needham to make it something that's really useful.
And if the rail is extended, is it going to go over this deck and it would be torn down?
Well, first of all, I can't see the rail getting extended in our lifetime, or at least not in the next 10 years, I suppose anything can happen because we'll be just elected for president.
But is that a yes or a no?
The right of way is an 80-foot right of way, and it could accommodate a Green Line extension and pathways and bikeways. It's plenty wide enough to do all that stuff someday. The question is, the extent to which we want to use it right now for pedestrian and bicycle travel. And the question on the table is, I don't know if we should be asking if there should be any further investigation into making a connection that's more useful than this, or this is a nice amenity by itself.
So how does this get on the list? Can you explain this? How did this get on the list? Is this something to
do with CIC?
This was just a request from the Upper Falls area, the supporters of the Greenway and the executive office to look into this to see about.
Okay, and so the administration decided to move forward with it.
They made the request. They committee support for it. Again, our initial estimates were around 25,000, so we were shocked when we got. So we did put it out to bid, and that's where it lands.
But the administration is still in support of it. Still wants to move forward, even though it has more than the original idea.
Yes.
Okay. And
but it wasn't in the CIP, right?
Not in the CIP, no.
This was an unexpected cost.
Okay, well, we have lots of unexpected costs.
Yeah. I'm wondering because of the hour, and we do have a school department waiting outside, though, and we're just getting the plans. If we can enlarge these plans, so they don't have to get all printed again and so forth, and possibly postpone this. This is not urgent. They're not going to want to do this before the snow flies because it's just so important to get down right away. I know the three people most invested in this, and I will tell them myself that I thought it was better for us to hold this and so everybody could think it through.
Yeah,
when it comes back.
Slip right out of my hand.
I want to know, actually, here's what I want to know. I want to know, since this is coming out of free cash and it was not of the CIT, what are the trade-offs? Is this an extra $71,000 we found? Is this, are we not doing another project because of this? So I know that's not really a question for you, it's a Maureen question, but I would like to see that at our next.
You're going to be rolling in dough, but just based on that lawsuit that we won last week. So all kidding aside, we're going to have more free cash than
we. Which lawsuit?
The lawsuit I read to you earlier with the telecommunications.
We're
going to be able to declare even. We were going to be able to declare a very healthy amount of overlay surplus, but we can even. Declare more now based on that successful lawsuit.
Really?
Yep.
When is that retroactive to?
I don't know.
So, but the question is still, is it at the top of the list?
Right. But I'm just saying, man, we're going to be in a better free cash position or have more available funds to us.
So I just want to be clear because I know that folks that you've just got these and you haven't been thinking about this. This is an unexpected cost and it's not urgent. So I'm
thinking
if you're in the hole, I would like to hold and get to the hole. Thank you.
Are we going to motion to hold? All in favor? Okay. Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to stay awake.
Let's not phone at each other.
No, it didn't. It was all went up all night last night.
Okay, what time are you trying
to it does happen when you
try to jam some more
stuff into one
night. I'm not thinking of any cool stuff like that.
Sorry for the lateness of the hour. So I'm going to take up this item 287-16 to appropriate $250,000. Mayor requesting authorization to appropriate and spend $250,000 from something called the Override Capital Stabilization Fund. You can find out why we can't use that for the purpose of renovating the space on the first floor of the Ed Center, which has been vacated by the relocation of the pre-K program to the Aquinas site to house the Central High School program, additional professional development meeting space, and general office space. So we had pictures in our packet which show the existing condition of the facility, and we had a copy of the public facilities or school facilities report from October in our packet, and I was aware that this was a project that was done, that the school department was interested in doing. And by the way, we're joined by Liam Hurley, who is the new, I forget what was Sandy's title.
Sandy. Yeah, give it to her, but assistant superintendent, she's been in the office. She's been in the administrative office very long.
Okay, who has a very long title. and we're joined by Mike Cronin of the school department, and we're joined by Steve Siegel, school committee member. But I just wanted to frame this, so I learned about this item coming to us for this agenda last Thursday, and then I did call Diana Gomberg over the weekend because the stuff in the packet was pretty thin, and I looked on the CIT, and I noticed it's on the CIT with it showing an alternate funding source, so I was not aware that when or if it was coming to us for funding. And then just yesterday,
I received a set of plans, which are pretty straightforward for the renovation of the space as proposed, and a thumbnail budget, which everyone should have a copy of because they were provided by Nadia on the table. Okay, so there's a thumbnail budget, but it's my understanding that it was prepared within the school department. And the public buildings department is not here, so they're not flying solo tonight.
No.
Okay. So with that, would you like to lay out the purpose and what you're looking for and the timeline you're hoping for?
Sure. Yeah. And again, my apologies if we didn't have enough information originally. I don't think I knew all the information that you were looking for. So again, Liam Hurley, happy to just kind of walk you through. So this, as you know, this is the result of basically the preschool moving out of the first floor of the education center, which there's a leg to be over at the new site, the former Aquinas site. So we have a nice piece of real estate on the first floor that has been the preschool for many, many years. I think more than, we don't know the time, but Mike's been there for a long time. It's been there for a long time. I would say tired, you know, space that has been living the preschool life for a long time. And this is an opportunity for us really to look at our programs and look at our needs that we've got. So we're looking at this kind of two ways. The first big need is the Central High School space, which we started about in 2009. Central High School is currently at Newton North in one space and in one of the annex rooms at the center. This is going to, they're going to stay at Newton North, but this is going to expand the Central High program, and we have a floor plan in green showing kind of the amount of space that they're going to be using, and highlighted what Central should be taking. Therefore, Central will move out of the annex, and we included some pictures there, and we'll allow the other two programs, the middle school stabilization program, which is for kids to come in for 30 or 45 days, that is currently at the annex as well, to then be able to expand, as well as the connections program, which is students of 18 to 22 years old, who's also in that building. So each of them are going to actually have an annex themselves. So there'll be one annex in the connections and one annex in the middle school stabilization. Jan Schmuckler was joining us for the programs and services. She didn't join us for the psychologist. So she's done the new assistant superintendent of student services, Jan Schmuckler. I apologize. She was at the early meeting and she had the job. So she was very diligent in talking about kind of each of the programs and the needs, saying that these programs have grown over time. We're trying to keep kids in district to the extent that we can, trying to bring kids back into the district. And so basically it's a little bit of a juggling of our spaces. I did try to take some pictures of the annex. I think that there was, having been here for a short time, having looked at the same shed building, I think there's some sensitivity to the modular building. I would say I watched the annex spaces. I took some pictures. The annex spaces on the exterior, that's the annex spaces, that's right. And Diana's joining us here.
Oh, sorry, Diana.
The interior of these two annex spaces are actually really relatively in good shape. They're in much better shape than actually the downstairs of the education center.
We all got them.
You got them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you can take a look at those ones. There's new windows in that space. It was meant to be occupied by people, and it also had some heating upgrades in the last couple of years as well. So those are some of the programmatic needs we have in terms of students. On the first floor as well, we've got some other moves that are going to take place, and I can kind of outline that. Some information technology, which is currently on the second floor, is going to move down and take a few feet to be closer to their other program, which is kind of in this lower level of the Ed Center, if you're aware of. I don't know if it's the gym or what that space technical is. The former Tech Arts. So they're going to be in closer proximity to each other, as well as the Newton School Foundation is going to move back in and take a small sliver of space, as well as a group called Understanding Our Differences, which is going to take a small sliver of space that's currently up in the curriculum and kind of the curriculum resource center. So we've got a little office component as well that we're using there, and we've got the piece with the central as the big piece. So with that, that's kind of the broad overview. I'm happy and Mike can chime in with any questions that you folks can show that.
Okay. Questions?
So I'll start. you answered this to a point, but I have a copy of your memo to the superintendent and to the school committee about your operational update. And as of October 1st, you are projecting a year-end deficit of $1.2 million. And I read about most of the majority of it being one-time cost, but there's still cost that, you know, somebody's going to have to cover, whether it be you by instituting certain cost savings early in the school budget so you can pay for these, or you're going to be looking for relief, you know, from the city side, okay? So I'm having a problem because on the one hand, you know, I'm all for making our facilities better for students, but in terms of everything that's going on, I'm questioning the priority, and I'm most definitely questioning the need to spend money on more office space in the Ed Center for professional development and for general office space. So probably not a fair question to you. But somebody needs to help me to understand that, because you've got a huge deficit right now, and I think that when we passed the school budget last year, as we have for several years, you got all the money that, you know, was requested. So I need to understand how you're going to deal with the deficit before I want to spend another $250,000. And by the way, I haven't seen one of these in a while, but I did want to compliment you on the memo that you put together and the backup and stuff like that. I used to get these on a regular basis, as did Susan when I was on the school committee.
Okay.
And it's a very detailed report, but some of the information in it is a little disturbing.
Yeah, well, me too. You know, it's a great question you raised. I think it's a complicated. I guess the response I would have for this committee is I would separate the two. We have a budget deficit. There's no doubt that it's related to a number of different things. I would say that I would separate the $250,000 request. We've got a real need in the first floor. One, it's not usable for us. We're sitting there. The students have not moved in from Central. It's in, I don't want to use the word deplorable, but it's not in good shape.
When you say the first floor, is that
at ground level?
Where my child went to the integrated preschool program, is that what you're talking about?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So it's not occupied right now. It's empty. In bad shape. We've got toy stalls that are about a foot high. You've seen some of the pictures in there. You're welcome to come. So, I'm thinking about this episode all the time. I guess my point is that I'm trying to separate. We've got a real estate issue that we want to take care of and help basically our programs we've got there. From our perspective, yes, there is some mutual benefits. From our office perspective, the big driver here is the students. And for districts our size, we're going to have a fantastic kind of PD, professional development space that we're going to create. This is the back internal space right now, which is in kind of an interior space that we're going to enlarge, and basically be able to house upwards of 60 plus people, and none of our conference rooms currently at the Ed Center can do that. So districts our size, we do need some large professional development. Currently, we'll go to Newton South, or we're thinking about going to Point of Sight when we're doing some of our big council meetings. So I think that'd be my response, but I would be certainly happy, and we're going to be just, you know, obviously addressing this deficit. That is top priority from my perspective being new here. That's going to be something that,
Before you jump in, okay? So the first floor is the basement to me. So, so the second floor, I think there. I was listening for you, but it wasn't clear to me. Is there any work to be done on the second floor?
Not
from this. So it's really everything in the basement.
Yeah.
And frankly, 90% of it is what you see in the room. Which is the central high. The community space is basically 100%. So I'm not saying you need to move down and run a few up. So there's movement from the second floor to the first floor. There's really no work to be done in those spaces. The space for it is going to be terribly split all our center. This bathroom was, I don't know if it's in the bathroom, but now that we renovated a few years ago, the other two are just awesome.
Yeah, we've had, my poor daughter was there and others were there for nearly a year.
The toilet was designed for those little people.
They just moved from the bicycle into the time of the So we're going to spend money in the right spot.
So will anybody be left, will there be any program left in the in any of the modulars, or is the plan to move everybody out of the modulars into the main building?
No, so the central will be moving out of the annex spaces.
Well, when you say annex?
It's just the modular. It's not really the modular.
They're not though. I think that's what they are. They're brick and mortar construction. They are in the block.
It looks like
it's just the block. It's 1950
building. Right.
Yeah.
So central will be, so all of the central students will be moving out of those, out of the annex.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Will, and so will, is there another program? I hear there was another program going into the annex.
So there's two other programs that are currently there. One is called the Middle School Stabilization Program. That's going to stay and expand.
What is that?
The middle school stabilization program is for students having severe needs that are coming in or out of the district, either emotional distress, and before they leave the district, they'll sometimes come in and do an evaluation for 10, 5, 15, 30, 45 days, and they're trying to stabilize these students. Sometimes it's stabilizing them coming back in from a treatment center or wherever it might be.
It's kind of like what's happening with the program that we just approved the modules for.
You didn't want them in the tent.
For middle school.
Yeah. Okay.
That's right.
Okay. Okay.
So wasn't there central at one time in the main education?
That's another program called Springboard.
You can't tell all the programs without a scorecard. there is a program that's in the SNS. What's it called?
Annex.
Is it still there? It is on the third floor, right? Yeah. And so it's still there?
It's still there.
And now
so what is Springboard?
Springboard's a regular education program where kids that struggle in a high school setting need something a little more smaller than other ones.
I thought that was kind of like the charge of Central.
Central is more of a special education program.
Okay.
Springboard is regular education. Central is very item driven.
There's different emotional needs that might be seen there. There might be a little more violence, but we've had some challenges for some of the students over here. The parents must have spoke to the fact that some of the Springboard students will be able to access some of the programs. They're trying to have a computer program here, trying to have kind of a vocational science lab that we're trying to use in this space as well.
All right, so my last financial question. So there's a budget item, there's a docketed budget item for a considerable amount of money for us to pay the busing costs from Zervis to Cox, right?
Yeah.
I noticed in your report you mentioned something about another bus unexpected. Is that in addition to?
So, again, this is, I'm coming into this position here. So really we utilize six buses to go to Zervis. And either from a budgeting perspective or budgeting error on the school department part, we thought all six buses were covered. According to Maureen, only five are. And one of the reasons is that the Zervis and Anger is a shared bus. At one point there was a shared bus situation, and so that bus was not covered as part of the program for the Zervis. So we're not coming to for all six buses, we're coming for five buses. So the school department, We didn't budget for that bus. We thought it was part of the project, and so we have to then just absorb this $81,000. So buses charge you basically a contract of $451 a day. It comes out to $81,000 per bus per year.
Good, but you plan on being able to cover that at some point.
We need to cover that. That's correct.
So
plus
one, I think I have Susan and then Carol.
Now, I'm not going to answer the bus question because it's way off track, even though I have one. I read about the cafeteria building. So is it just for this program, or can others come and use the cafeteria?
So others can come and use it. In fact, Springboard can use that program. I believe that even the middle school stabilization or connection program could come and use that. So it's a nice cafeteria. We've got some windows, and I don't know.
It's well fitted by Sodexo, the new food service management company, and they'll have several culinary components. We'll have real stores to do that kind of work.
So will staff be able to go there and buy food?
I don't think we come and buy food. I don't think Sodexo, but what Sodexo does do is you can actually deliver food to staff and staff order. So basically,
we have a limited order form that we send to the high school, the high school fills it, and they deliver it to the building. It's kind of a distribution system.
Okay, I was just wondering, just want to submit the cafeteria.
Not like it's not enough. It's more than self delivery.
Okay. And so when did you guys know that you wanted to do this?
My understanding is this has been in the offing for a while. I mean, this has been a plan for a while, and Maureen has been aware that this is part of the CIP plan.
Okay, so
is
this part of the CIP? That's what
yeah.
It's in the CIP.
That's bumped the down in the list.
No, it's in for this fiscal year, but it's shown as an alternate funding source. That's why I said earlier I wasn't clear when or if it was coming to us. And some of that confusion might be, it's not explained by this very detailed report that but when I look at the kinds of things that are noted as overages, they're all kind of big projects.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a little unclear to me, what constitutes a charter maintenance project or a project that you would take on somehow within your budget versus what we would expect to see, and it all goes in the capital improvement program. So unless we get a separate heads up in brief with a little more notice than a few days, I didn't know it was coming our way, and I'm sure the work is valuable, but I think that's part of what we're trying to understand here.
Yeah.
It's not clear to me yet how it relates to the school budget overage, given the other projects that are being cited here as the reason for the overage.
Well, I mean, I think some of the only comment, again, I think I'm trying to separate these two. I mean, for example, the bird plumbing, that was an unplanned, uncontrollable expense.
Totally get that,
This program of the preschool purposely moving out and trying to renovate that place, I think this has been a planned expense that I think that the state CFO, school department has been planning for a while. I don't know in terms of communication or why you haven't known about it. It's on the CIP.
No, I did say I know about it.
Okay.
I didn't know it was coming to us for funding, which is
okay.
I haven't had a chance to check, but you're saying that this was one of the 15 items that was listed as part of the CIP for FY17 that we approved?
Yes. Well, so let me qualify that. So I said in the CIP we just received, it's shown as approved, not approved. We didn't approve it. We're about to approve it, perhaps. But it's in the CIP as one of the capital works that we're expecting to pay for somehow this year. And
because we approve at budget time, we approve the FY17 capital improvement plan with the understanding that it will come back to
that's
the individual committee.
Yes.
So you're saying that when we did this at budget time, and I should have checked this already.
Back in the spring, you're talking about.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Get back
I didn't check last year's CIP, but I looked at this year's draft CIP, and it's in there as something we approved at budget time. But you know that a lot of the projects that we approved at budget time have a variety of funding sources identified that go along with them, and this one says alternate. So that can mean a whole lot of different things. It's a technicality kind of. My point was really not such a huge point, it's just that I didn't know it was coming to us now. That's all. So it's just a few days notice, that's all. And at the same time, we got this report, so I think that's what.
Yeah, all of us haven't seen that report, but I think it's conflating. I think it is conflating two things, because this is a construction project to make the first floor usable, and I get that. So I get that part. And just the annex used to be freezing cold. You fixed that problem?
Yep.
It's not cold anymore? Okay.
We walked through the other day, and it cooled the day, and it was warm.
Okay. Thanks.
You last year all winter, from say November on, we were there.
Okay.
We have some
technology, which is in November, but I will have to move that.
So, I'm kind of getting along there, so what's next to Lenny, Vicki?
Whatever.
Go ahead.
You were talking kind of quickly, or maybe I just didn't catch it. Middle school stabilization will still be at the annex, and was there one of the programs?
Yes, there is a program called Connections.
And what is
Connections? Connections is the program for 18 to 22-year-old students, so they haven't graduated yet. They're still with us. And a lot of those students come in, and this is kind of like a home base for these students. They're trying to learn some life skills. They actually will go out, and some of them are trying to help them sometimes actually go out and volunteer in a certain area. They come around and do some of the mail in some of these spaces. So they'll come in learning to try and cook, learning to try and actually use money to count and things like that. So the Connections program will also take one of the annex spaces.
It's really about basic life skills.
And these are currently there and they're staying there?
They're currently there in a small space right now.
Are you doing any upgrades to the annex?
So the annex that we moved into?
Yeah.
In fact, I had you walk through it the other day with us, and she was like, it's great, move one sign.
Move one what?
Move one, and you got signs actually on your doors and you can write it to us.
My understanding, Student Services is really, and the program directors are really excited about this. This is going to let them have some elbow room and let them grow.
Okay.
Having that
stuff. I know, I've inspected by the state every year, and that facility will pass every year.
Okay, well, maybe the shed would pass, but I still don't know the shed, so.
Connections here now?
Connections here they're now. Okay. They have 26 students and 12 staff in a room smaller than this, including a kitchen. So. Mm. It's snuck. And then, so they moved there. And then some of them below this burden came out of the community.
And how many kids in the middle school stabilization program?
Right now, it's three.
Three. Okay, and Central High is larger.
How many? 17 to try to get to 30.
17 to try to get to 30. So why did you choose to move them there instead of the Connections program?
Connections wants to be more isolated. They want to have more time out and not in the building as much as.
Mm-hmm.
That's why
I
did it all
day long
last
school day.
Okay.
Okay. Justice, over on the...
So
it says 2 to 3 month timeline is 2 to 3 months from approval.
Yeah.
Is this coming to us now in the middle of the school year because you didn't get around to getting it designed until now? Or but the time seems a little unusual that if you would want to, wouldn't you want to start a school year with a brand new...
We had to get the preschool out. You're right. I guess ideally the funding would have been set up, and I don't know, maybe there was some overlap with me being new. Again, forgive me not knowing the process. I actually thought since we got approval on the CIP, that we were approved to even do this. So I didn't actually know that we were coming to the docket request.
Yeah.
So I need to kind of get up to speed on this. So Maureen said, you need to docket this request. And I said, absolutely, we'll docket this request. I got a request to within the next day. Again, they've been on my side not having that money, but we would like to proceed as soon as we can. The students have not moved in.
So remember, we didn't finish the preschool out until after their August program ended. Their running program is August 17th. So we couldn't have done anything ahead of time.
Yeah.
That would be slow and really concentrated on a fairly significant project over at Climate to get that building.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really bare bones up to a real deal.
Yeah.
We haven't identified the source of funding for this, the source of financing for this. It hasn't been discussed
it's suggested that it be the capital stabilization fund, right? But there's an issue about whether we can do that.
Yeah,
so
it wasn't
today.
David Wilkinson sent us a memo. Saying, whoops, to the administration that we can't use that funding source because it's targeted. to programs that projects that were specifically passed as part of the 2013 override. This was not one of them. So either we amend the fund, purposes of the fund, which would take some time, or another funding source is identified. So
would we then go move to pre-cap?
Yeah, I mean, that's up to the administration, and we know that this proposed funding source doesn't work, so it's going to be up to the administration to identify another one, certainly by the time it got to find it.
Yeah.
So can you just move it in here?
Yeah, if we were to approve it here, subject to it going to finance, getting all the finance worked out?
Yeah. You're going to be in there banging nails during the school year, or are you doing this over the summer?
No,
this
as soon as we can
prove
this, we've got students who want to move in, you know, we've got programs who want to move in, so we do want to apply.
Yeah.
And no one's in there, so we won't be disrupting anybody working on that.
I guess if I was on the next floor up, I might disagree, but.
Those are adults that will be there.
So have you. I'm sorry, you had the floor.
Go ahead.
So, where are you with, I mean, this is your budget.
Mm-hmm.
What interaction has there been with the public building department? Have they helped you with this budget?
Well, I talked to the architect. We talked to the architect.
Yeah, what about John?
I know, I'm sorry. Who did you talk to on public building?
Akaba. We're working on a variety of different projects.
Okay.
That's pretty good numbers.
I'm also meeting with me, Mike, and Josh. I mean, once a week on Mondays. Josh is aware of this project. Yep. He's been helping us out. He knows what we're
doing. Who's managing the project?
Probably.
I don't think this is
I don't remember it.
That's what I'm trying to say. This year's CIP has something we approved while we're here, but we didn't
do
this year.
Do I don't remember this?
I don't remember
this. I just looked at it. It's in this year as having been.
Well, remember, this year's we're in FY17, so we're looking at FY17. I didn't see it.
Right.
You talked about presented the 18.
But in the FY18 CIP, it's shown in the column that was established for FY17, but not yet appropriated.
Yeah.
Well, we can find out, but I mean, the bottom line is there's a very, I ask the administration every year to give us a very specific list of CIP items to be completed in FY17, and that's the only thing that we actually vote on.
Yeah.
Technically, we vote on the five-year plan, but the only thing I say to you every year that really matters is FY17. And then this year, if you remember, Maureen even gave us like three items to be aware of that she may be asking for. But then there was a list of 10, 12, or 14 specific items to be done, and I don't think that this was on it. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, that you can't approve something that wasn't on it, but I don't remember it being on there.
Well, it's in the book we just received. That's all I would say.
All right, so that's not last year's approval.
It's not, but it's shown in the last year. You know what I'm saying? There's a column for FY 18 through 22, whatever. There's a column for FY17 and the status of the projects that are listed in that column. Most of which we did approve as part of last year. I hadn't compared the two books.
Okay.
There's a staircase in here, a couple of rows.
But let's not have time to talk about that.
Have you had discussions with Josh about? So you're going to get a general contract?
Yeah. We're going to have an on-call architect, and they'll.
That's what I was getting at.
Does this have to go out to the public bid?
No. So we have an on-call general contractor. So we pull them in to do work like this.
Okay. And even though it's over the normal amount that has to go to public bid?
My understanding is by using the on-call general contractor.
We have an on-call general contractor that have a very high fee on it.
Okay.
So purchase,
just purchase under it.
Purchase is okay.
What else is in?
I see.
And public buildings is doing some of the demo work, some of the paintings. We're getting the benefit of
you have people. An on-call general contractor?
Well, no, we don't. Public Guard has three general contractors that we went out to bid for, and we came back with Bruce McGovern, Homer Construction, and Vanguard Construction. Mm. Bruce McGovern is doing the modular work and the general contractor, and I was set for 60.
When would you like to move the students?
Honestly, as soon as we can, we're saying 2 to 3 months from approval. I don't, you know, I think this is a financing city council, so if that was by December, you know, a couple of months from that, so it's going to be after the new year by the time we get students in.
And would you start
a
process?
Let's say, with the calendar. We're not, this committee's not meeting again until December 7th. Which is why I called Diana when I saw this, and I thought, we need a lot more information, and now we have much of it, but I'm hearing an awful lot of questions here that need to get answered, and I'm thinking the public building should be in the room for and or a member of the administration to answer some of those questions.
When's our next PF meeting?
Not until December 7th.
Mm-hmm.
It's the next and only meeting we have for the rest of the year because we would normally have another meeting this month, but it falls the night before Thanksgiving, and we have literally booked up every other night until December. And I don't think we could add a meeting after the December 7th meeting.
I doubt it.
But it would be really difficult
even to do that. Find a date.
So I think we have to look at the calendar, and it was really a big reason why we like to plan these things in advance.
Mm-hmm.
Not only to make sure we get the materials, but that we understand the parameters of the request and where it sits and all that.
Yeah. My understanding is you have the scope of work. I think you understand the need of the work here. You have,
I have questions about the budget numbers, but that's relatively minor.
All right. Yeah, I guess the question I have, what questions are unanswered? Is it the CIP questions or the budget questions? As I said, I'm trying to bifurcate those questions. I think you understand the need of the school and the space condition. I think that's kind of the point that
I'm
going to make.
So my dad, I didn't check the old CIP, the one that we're currently working on. I was just working from the new document. So the point has been made that there's a whole bunch of projects that get approved in the previous year for the fiscal year that we're in. And even though they're approved, which apparently this one was not approved but during budget, each one requires its own separate appropriation, which goes to an approval project based on, you know, what is the program, how well does it satisfy the program, what's the budget, how well, you know, value for you, all those kinds of things. So that then the appropriation is made once all those things are satisfactorily vetted.
Okay.
Right? But this project apparently wasn't on that list, it's on this year's list. It's being proposed to be added to this year's CIP.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's why when Lenny brought up, now that we've established that, when Lenny brought up the report that we just got that shows that we're running a deficit, and we're proposing to add to this year's CIP, so how are we going to do that financially? How are we going to do that? Now, I think there is money in free cash, but there, you know, I didn't.
Yeah, so the questions really aren't for you.
Public buildings.
Yes, Diana Fisher-Gomberg has been with us. You can ask me this way,
Brian. So I'm just trying to say, what additional information does public facilities need versus what additional information does finance need on Monday?
I don't know if it's on finance as well on Monday. Well, we were told it made it bump. That's what we were told.
No, it isn't on finance. And it's, don't take it personally. We have such an agenda, and I don't want to be in, and I'm, this isn't a criticism. I don't want to be in this position on Monday night, and we have leaf blowers that we have to get done. It's been around for 2+ years, and it's out of finance on Monday night. It's to get into this, because the other...
I have a number of financial questions that I'm not going to bog this committee down with. And rather than docket a separate item, because I do want some answers about how you plan on handling this deficit, I figured rather than dragging you in twice, so we could have the discussion around this item, and this, you know, so we could save some time. So it's going to take a while when it does get to finance. Hopefully it'll all be good. I need some answers to some things, and I'm not going to be alone with finance. So it's going to take a while. So I had already made the decision we couldn't take it up this Monday anyway. So you're not missing out on anything.
This is a decision I probably should have made, because I warned you all I had such a long agenda, and you had to wait on the hall for so long, and here we are. I'm all exhausted.
Is there any comment on internet?
Well, there's, I'm going to be up in it. I'll take the time to come over and so that I can get shown around. But for well, for, I mean, you could take care of this tomorrow and chart out a chart of maintenance, I would think. There's nothing to prohibit you from doing it, right?
Our budget deficit would grow another
$250,000. But one of the things that I want to, I'm going to come over and I'm going to look at, and I'm going to be very honest with you. I'm not in the mood, personally, to spend a single penny on anything other than what the students are going to benefit from. So I'm not going to pay, I'm not going to support money for, you know, another big classroom space so that everybody, I don't think it's a hardship to go to Newton South or one of our other new school buildings and use the space there and conduct these, professional training that you were mentioning. I don't think that's a big hardship. So I question the need for some of the office space that needs to be done. And if it's all that important, then we might need to talk about cost sharing. We're going to break it out, and we'll take care of the students maybe. I don't know, but there are some questions to be answered. But I'm not interested in building any more general office space or any other space at the Ed Center. Not what I, that's not to me a real pressing need. With all the other things that are needed in our schools and are needed on the city side. We don't have a room here that we can put 60 people in. So that argument I'm not very sympathetic to. So students, but there's some discussions that need to take place. And I appreciate the fact that you want to get this done as soon as possible, but it's going to take a little time. And again, we did not have any heads up on this last year. Normally, it would have been in one of those, you know, 10, 12 items that we would have taken up in under FY17 CIP. We would have been discussed at length in the spring. A lot of this stuff could have been flushed out in the spring, and we'd be in a better position right now. And it's not your fault. You know, I know you're new and everything, and it's, but I just want you to understand that we're not here looking to, you know, be unreasonable and make your life miserable, but on the other hand, we got some stuff to do, and we need some questions.
I don't mean to add to that. but I will say, I think it would be helpful from now on to have someone from the building department here, and particularly when we're looking at a budget that's been developed internally. I don't know how could you feel about this budget. You say you work with art over at public buildings. It's a little light to me on a couple of items. And so, and you know, so it looks like there's a fair amount of work here. Roughly judging from some other internal reconfigurations we've done at City Hall and other places. So sometimes projects don't come even to this table on the city side, or even for major school projects or fire stations or whatever, even if they're just additions or internal stuff, without having some vetted numbers vetted from outside. So I'm just going to mention that. And that's not specifically the purview of this committee, but again, it's just sort of the whole thing all together and how it's coming to us.
Okay.
So I think it sounds like it'd be better to hold it and come back with some clear heads and a good night's sleep and take care of it at a later date. The one thing I will suggest is maybe Lenny and I should talk about, I don't know how your, what your agendas are looking like going forward. Again, we only have one, it's kind of full, but maybe we could meet with you jointly ahead of some, if you have a meeting there sometime in, I don't know,
We just sold it, we're put it on the table.
Yeah.
I think I had mentioned to you in a voicemail. I've had a conversation with you, I think you talked to John. We talked about a, I would like to put our committee of the whole together on the library issue.
Yeah.
It's another whole issue that we need to deal with.
Yeah, we're looking for it to buy January 26th
a grant proposal. So we need to chat about that.
We took up one of those. Don't we have a meeting like on the 30th to go all to go over the
legal project? Yeah. The library.
This is library.
No.
Do it on the 30th.
Huh?
Are you thinking we could do it on the 30th?
Well, I think that maybe we could have get it would we could spend some time on this. I would think as part of that report and save some time.
What this or the library?
This, no, this.
Yeah.
We're meeting with the school for an update on.
That's true.
Okay. Long range plan. Sorry, just put up there because we were talking dates and calendars.
Yeah. No, that's actually an interesting idea. We have our ducks in a row. So, November 30th. Can we do it in school? I don't know.
I'll have to add to the agenda.
That's kind of a big discussion.
That's a big discussion.
But you don't want to talk about anything for more than 2 hours.
No. We will
be talking
about
the discussion based on, you know, the different programs and the way kind of be moving from, you know, instruction. So, I think that's part of the thing. Just not to digress, but the 30th should also, we should be doing the 30th more often.
Yes.
So if we need to have this on that night, it's fine, because we should be doing another 30th another time relatively soon. So, we should keep that in
that
mind, too.
Great.
Yeah.
But then,
like you said, the
rainy
days are time to
get back to the school.
You
need
to talk
about that. I think the question, when would you be done with it? Maybe. Do we want Maureen there
at
that meeting?
She's
going to
be
there.
On what?
Is she going to be at the
30th? She and Josh have already
been
doing that. They will. Okay. So Maureen will be at finance. Are we going to talk about it at finance before then?
No, I mean, we have to have the recommendation from TF.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
We might, we, our next, next Monday is the 13th, is it the 14th?
14th.
It's the 14th, and so finance is meeting on the 28th.
Two Mondays, the 14th and 28th.
Yeah. Well, that's when I was planning on taking it up because I figured that, you know, because I figured that it would be, if it was done in this committee. But, and I think it should go through this committee before it comes to finance. So, then the next meeting is basically 2 weeks after that. So the worst thing that would happen would be if you were able to dispose of this based on some information that you got on the 30th, and then you have a meeting the first week in December, right? So you could technically get this done the first week in December, and then we would take it up at our finance meeting that following Monday. So the worst thing that happens, really, from what this plan was anyway, is that you lose 2 weeks. So I'm sure you'd rather have it, but it's not the worst thing in the world. So.
That sounds reasonable.
I would suggest that they get as much information on the 30th as possible to save time for your first meeting in December. And if you can
be very well organized, because I think we also have a long agenda that night. Be very well organized with the information that needs to come forward. I'd like to have some understanding, too, about what this means. Although I'm not on finance, I would still, as a council member, like to understand what this means in terms of adding to CIP, adding points, and other projects that might be getting pushed around or whatever.
Can I just ask one question go back to the CIP? Did this appear for the first time in the CIP that was just printed, or was it in the previous CIP?
I have this one, the old one here. Yeah. Did we get an addendum to that?
No.
Because it's not in that one. It's not on the
CIP. So we've never voted then on this, because the CIP has just come out.
That's one of the things we're going to figure out.
I thought I heard in the beginning that we had already voted on this.
No. Yes, but we realized that it's...
So in the old days, okay, in the real old days, it used to be that the school department, and the school committee would create their own capital improvement plan, and that they would take a vote, and they would send, we would send it on to the Board of Aldermen, now the City Council. Is that still the practice? Do you guys vote in the springtime or at some point your capital capital improvement project?
A plan?
Well, I would have a regular annual spring event. It's outdated.
But there's dollars associated with projects.
So. But does it identify your priorities? You know, because maybe that's what's been missing, because we've had a few...
Remember the CIP changed completely when they went to the new fossil package based on, mm-hmm. on this. So this is a committee here at City Hall that looks at all of the issues throughout the city. So the school committee really isn't involved with prioritizing. We're still allowed to say, okay, here's the list, here's what's next up on the roster. If you agree, disagree, they actually vote on it. Sometimes they have some feedback that they say, hey, what about?
Well, this is the kind of thing that deserves a whole lot more discussion, and I know there's many of us who are interested in talking about coordinating understanding, because eventually it's all one list, it's all one group budget, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think what I'm hearing when you say is, you know, actually the school department does feed into the city CIP, obviously, there's a ton of school projects in there. But in addition, you're constantly evaluating and reevaluating your space, and a number of those needs are taken care of out of what is that we refer to as charter maintenance, right? And I think there's not a clear line between what's maintenance and what is a project of you know, more substance, and so it's confusing. And some of those projects that sometimes get put onto charter maintenance are certainly not in the citywide CIP, even though they might be $100,000 or $200,000. And so I think they're getting lost in the process, maybe because of that. And the other way to handle it might be, and I think there's something else we all want to talk about, is... As I remember from years back, the school committee also got involved in at least reviewing, but often making recommendations on what the charter maintenance program would include. So, I mean, you know, if you want to renovate these bathrooms or fix that, leak in the roof, or I don't know what, I'm making that up, but, you know, how do you decide what goes on that list versus what it is you bring here? For additional funding. And that might be confusing our conversation as well.
Okay. We hold.
Yeah, I move we go to bed. So I'm sorry this didn't work out for tonight, but I think we have a solution for moving it forward.
Okay, more information that we suggest prior to the 30th and on the 30th will improve the chances of this being approved on December whatever it is in PF, which would then 7th, which would then be taken up on it's the 14th that we're going to be meeting the following Wednesday in finance.
Request to connect Washington Street, Walsingham Street to the city sewer system, item number 334-16.
This was originally docketed because it was going to be an extension of the sewer, a sewer extension which needs to go through the council. As it turned out, there are four people on the street. They were all going to do it. It was going to be a sewer extension. Three of them decided they didn't want to go through the expense, so the one owner at the end, who built a new house or renovated a house, is going to connect and pay the whole expense. So therefore, it's now treated as a service instead of a sewer extension. So it does not have to come to the city council, but it still needs to be properly engineered, and they will oversee the project in engineering. So we're still going to have the oversight, but it's no longer a sewer extension, so we can NAM the item.
Would you like to move it?
I'll move it.
All in favor? It's unanimous.
Thank you very much.
What did the other three chairmen do?
They have stuff.